qualified of the students and of our state of readiness towards the success of the program. I'm not alone, as already indicated, Honorable Chair. I've got a colleague of mine, a board member, and an executive director. I think he's sitting behind me, Mr. Lidwaba. And then the other members that I've brought up, members of management who are closely related to the program. Next to me is Ms. Makoto Moelwa. She's our stakeholder and performance management executive. And then across the table, next to the computer, there is Thabo Mukenete. He's the one who's part and parcel of this program. He's the one who knows what's happening there. He's the one who's dealing with it on a day-to-day basis. And then to my right, almost at the back, we have got Uzumile Lamani, the head of business development services. And I think behind me on my left-hand side is Ms. Consul Lamini. She comes from the company secretariat. Let me hasten, Honorable Chair and members, of the fact that we are cognizant and we've taken note and had the privilege of listening to the presentations here. And let me be allowed to confirm the fact that we are convinced that USASA, that the success of this program is solely dependent on better coordination as well as integration of the efforts of us as role players in the DOC family for it to be able to continue. So allow me then, Honorable Members and Chair, to hand over the table to take us through what we have been busy with, what you're contributing to the table, and some of the actions that we would need to be taking in order to take this process forward for success. Thank you. I'll comment later when it's finished.
Before you hand over, Chairperson, I'm told that the Chairperson for South African Post Office, he was outside, he tried to come in, but he has fell sick. He had to go back to the hotel for medical attention. I'm just raising that because I've got the tendency of forget. But he was here, and he could not manage to come in. He had to go back for medical attention and so on. But he was here. You may proceed, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. In my presentation, I think I'd like to start with...
Is this slow problem?
In my presentation, I think I'd like to start with the background in terms of the role of USASA in this project exactly. I think, as we know, from the ECA, USASA is responsible for managing the Universal Service and Access Fund. And according to the Broadcasting Digital Migration Policy that was published in 2008 initially, and again in the amended one in 2012, the funds for subsidizing set-top boxes are going to come from the Universal Service and Access Fund, which means that as USASA, we are responsible for managing the disbursements of those subsidies to the poor Tigonian households that are targeted as part of this process. In terms of that, what has been approved is that we will subsidize set-top boxes at a level of 70% of the cost of the set-top box to households that qualify, and the number that was approved just is 5 million poor TV-owning households throughout the country. We are also subsidizing 100% towards the cost of the aerial and the dishboard DTH and the installation of the whole system in terms of those poor TV-owning households. You are also required to subsidize 100% of the set-top box cost, the dish, and the installation for those households that are within the SKA area that are affected by the SKA project in the Northern Cape. One of our key, I think, responsibilities in terms of this project has been to develop the qualifying criteria, which is that criteria that will be used to determine which households will actually qualify for a subsidy and how do they qualify for that subsidy, how do they apply, how do they actually get the sets of books in their home and installed. In the qualifying criteria itself, we start with the eligibility. These are households that, how do we define a household that's eligible to receive a set-top box subsidy? The household must, of course, own a functioning TV set. The applicant must be a South African citizen because we're only subsidizing South Africans. And the combined household income must be equal to or below 3,200. This is the figure that came out of the cabinet-approved SOA framework, which was approved in February this year. Those households also that depend on either a child support grant, an old age grant, and a disability grant will also qualify for a subsidy. And also households that are already covered by the SABC's concessionary TV licenses. We included this because the criteria that the SABC is using for this TV licenses falls is part of the criteria that we're using. So if a household is already part of the database of those concessionary TV license holders, they qualify for a set-top box subsidy. Now, for households to prove that they actually qualify, there are a number of things that are required from our side to make sure that the right household is actually subsidized. Firstly, as proof of TV ownership, because we are subsidizing TV-owning households and not households that do not own TVs. Proof of TV ownership, the first one that we have is a TV license. If an applicant comes and they don't have a TV license, they will then be required to apply for a TV license on the spot. Of course, a green barcode identity document to prove that you are a South African. And proof of household income, it's either a payslip or a letter from the employer that has been stamped by the SAPS or a commissioner of oaths. You can also have an affidavit from SAPS as proving your source of income and actually how much you earn. For those households that have bank accounts, they can also include bank account statements. In some deliberation that we've had with traditional leaders in a number of provinces throughout the country, what was indicated was that also a letter from a traditional leader in the area should be good enough as long as it's also been through the Commissioner of Oaths. The dependency of social grants, SASA as the agency that's responsible for managing that, will also provide a proof of social grant. Concessional TV licenses, we're already working with the SABC and we have access to that verification of that TV license. Now, in terms of the process of applying for subsidies, how a household will apply for subsidy and how do they qualify, how do they actually get the set-top box in the household? Firstly, an applicant will go to a post office branch to apply for the subsidy. There is an application form that we have developed together with the post office and the DOC. So they will fill in that application form at the post office branch. They will then be required to provide also a documentation, a relevant documentation to that application, which is the proof that I have spoken about in my previous slide. Now, that information is captured in electronic format and a receipt is then generated, which is basically the proof that you have applied for subsidy and your application is being considered. Now, the applicant's information is then verified to the relevant parties. If a person is dependent on social grant, it will be verified with SASA. We will also verify the SABC TV license and so on, and the outcome will then be communicated to the applicant. Now, if the applicant qualifies for a subsidy, they will then be able to collect the subsidy at the post office branch. And on collection, they will be required then to pay the balance of 80%, which SASA is not subsidizing, 80%, and they will receive the set-top box together with an antenna, and they will be given an installation voucher. Now, as soon as that transaction happens, a local installer will be informed, and they will be requested to then go install the set-top box. This is a process that we've worked together with the DOC and post office and the SABC in this matter. On installation, when a household is then satisfied that the set-top box works, they have seen that the video on that's coming from the transition. set of box. Now, this voucher is what the post office is going to use to pay the installer who has installed the set-top box. Now, looking at the process that we have, we've worked quite closely with the post office in terms of the business rules and so on to make sure that this process should also be able to have an immediate effect. If I come into a post office branch, I fill in an application, I have all the relevant documentation, I should be able to be qualified to be approved for the subsidy. I should be able to pay the 50% and leave the post office branch with a set-top box in my hand. This is the process that we're working together with the post office on, and I think we've gone quite far on that. The progress to date, we have signed an MOU with the DOC post office and the SABC in which we are working together on this project. USASA itself is going to manage the process of ordering set-top boxes from appointed manufacturers and the payment of subsidies to those manufacturers for the orders and the payment of the antennas and the installation to post office for the installation. Post office will be managing the application process, the distribution process, the reverse logistics process. They will be managing basically the whole process from application up until the household actually has a set-top box installed in their house. The DOC, obviously, in this process, they are taking, besides their bigger role of coordinating the whole project, they are taking on the process of training and accreditation of installers for the set-top boxes. The SABC also plays a crucial role, I think, in this process because we will be using them to do verification of TV licenses. And we'll also be using them where a household comes and applies and they don't have a TV license. So this is the partnership that we have created in terms of the whole process. And in terms of that also, what post office has been able to do, I mean, we have defined the relevant business processes in terms of the business rules that are required to make sure that this process actually happens. And SAPO has actually commenced the development of that requirement from the subsidy side. The application form, as I mentioned, it has been designed. It will be printed, which SAPO has acquired the printing services, but we cannot as yet commence with the printing because the qualifying criteria is one that needs to be gazetted and needs to be agreed upon by the entire country. Because that affects actually how the form looks and what information is required on the application form. SAPO, again, is already gearing their warehouses to receive and distribute these set-top boxes. Of course, this is also dependent on manufacturers that will have been appointed through the tender process, that they have been appointed by that time so that we know where they are, where their locations are, where manufacturing plants are, and so on, and that distribution can happen seamless. I think in terms of our ending remarks is that USADA, DOC, and SAPO, SABC, we have done quite a lot. We've had a project committee that we meet on a weekly basis from, I think, late last year. We started with the processes. For quite some time, we have been working on the processes. We have looked at a number of eventualities, and I think we are quite far in terms of the project itself. On launch, I think we will fully be ready for the subsidy process. All the eventualities, as I say, we have covered. I think that's my presentation. I'll hand over to the chair.
No, Chairperson, you do enjoy the benefits of Dr. Ngubu and Dr. Nguban. So you can come in there.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the Honourable House. I think at this stage, Chair, we are available to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you. You see, Honourable Mrutu has got here. She will kill me when she comes like that. The last one. Honorable Singh, Doc,
question before my thing.
Thank you, Jefferson. My first remark would be, we've been at pains since yesterday, not only ourselves, but the entities, to talk about the crucial awareness campaign. And having looked through the presentations, I think we need to start with this type of thing, Jefferson. From now onwards, every document related to DTT should have the logo on it. As a start. I noted that the post offices has it as well, but it would be nice if it was perhaps one logo that people can identify with, that they eventually see it and they know immediately what it is. That was just a comment to take this community awareness or kick it off, Jefferson.
It is community awareness.
Well, even
it
this
is community. Okay. Yeah, good.
Yeah. Jefferson, I've got a few questions here. Thank you for the presentation. It's really very sort of simple and I don't know, for me, obvious questions. And I want to go to your page on the eligibility, for starters. You talk specifically about a functioning TVZ. And then down at the bottom, you've got the concessionary TV license. Now, we may very well have people who do have a concessionary TV license who no longer have a functioning TVZ. So would it be one or the other? And if they come with a concessionary TV license, does that mean that you assume they automatically have a functioning TV set? Excuse me. Then I'd also like to know, since there is some interaction with the SABC, do you know at this stage how many people currently qualify for the concessionary TV license? And going on to the next page, Chairperson, again about the TV ownership and that applicant will be required to apply for a TV license. And it links to another question which I'm going to pose now as well, and that is the level of corruption. I mean, we see even with social grants, with housing subsidies, people bypass the system. What processes have you put in place to, in fact, minimize, because I don't believe you can cut out completely, but minimize corruption where people who actually do not qualify will end up getting subsidized set-top boxes. And linked to that, I'm very concerned about people being taken, their vulnerability being abused by where they'll probably qualify for a set-top box, they'll actually acquire one, but perhaps in the weeks to follow immediately thereafter, they'll be tempted to sell it off to somebody. And do without it. Is there any process, is there any way that could be minimized? It's probably difficult, if not impossible, but I'd like to know if you've actually given it some thought. One of my colleagues asked a question of one of the other entities yesterday about the 30% that people are supposed to be paying. Can I assume that people will only then get their set-top box once they pay their 30% in full? Not everybody will be able to do that, they qualify for it. Some may want to opt to pay it off. Is that going to be allowed, and is that my assumption then therefore correct, that only on completion of having paid their 30% in full, that they will then walk away with the set-top box? And lastly, Chairperson, two questions. You mentioned, and perhaps I should leave this for the South African Post Office, but since you've raised it, you can maybe give us some sort of idea. You talk about they are already gearing the warehouses to receive. You're welcome to omit it, and they can answer there themselves, so they can elaborate when they do their presentation. And this is now really the last question. On your ending remarks, on launch of DTT, the four parties will be fully ready for the majority of possible eventualities. You haven't really addressed any risks that you may face, and that includes the corruption issue. But can you give me an idea of what possible eventualities you may have taken into consideration, please? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. Then I'm sorry, Edina. You didn't scratch the barrel. Honourable Drogen.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you for the presentation from USASA. I have three issues that I want to address. Who's going to handle the checking of the qualification and criteria? Is it going to be USASA? Are you going to take that responsibility, or is it going to be SOLVA? Who's going to verify those criteria? And I am not going to be comfortable when a person pays the 50% and then they've been given the set-top box and antenna, and you know, considering how big those antennas are, and I'm not comfortable for them taking that antenna home. Why can't they, given the proof of paying the proof that they paid for the set-top box, the 30%, and then submit that proof to the installer, and then the installer will come and then do the installation. Why must he then take that set-top box with him out of the post office where he paid for it? So when I paid for DSD and they themselves bring it to my home, why can't we have a similar practice? And then just one question just came up with your permission, Chairperson. I wonder, some households do have more than one TV. Is it one set-up box per TV or one set-up box per house? Can that set-up box be linked to many TVs in-house? I know that if everyone is analog, can do all TVs, but does all the TVs need set-up boxes? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Chair. And thank you, USASA, for the presentation. Chair, I'm tempted to say it up front that unfortunately, we are not judged by what you wish to do or you plan to do. We are judged by what you have been doing. What guarantee do we have? Notwithstanding that we've got the new council and all that in terms of the chair and everybody, and also I can see the new faces from also in terms of the administration and noting the levels also. What guarantee can we get as South Africans that this time around on this important project, we're not going to get the repeat in everything in terms of our performance and our capabilities as USASA? That's one, Chair. Two, linked to that, what USASA will be actually managing is the transfer of payments from the beneficiary to the service provider in terms of the set-top boxes. The way it's being explained, and I would like to apologize that I didn't get it, but also I got a little bit of understanding that needs to be confirmed, that you would not necessarily have a project plan or implementation plan in terms of KD. Who's going to do what, although you did say it, but in terms of the budget plan, because we'll also be doing it together with SAPO. But if you listen in terms of our business processes, in terms of the actual execution of the mandate that you have been given, large portion of it will be done by some. I might be wrong, but what I heard, that the application submission, the proof of payment, and all those things, also collecting the actual gadget home and conducting your installer and all those things. Then get my first statement in terms of assurity, in terms of executing the task. Taking from what my honourable member from the back at my right, I'm sure you'll respond to this one because it's a great open window for potential abuse of the whole scheme or subsidy rather. But also which I don't get it, and earlier on we've asked other presenters and they opted not to respond to it. The chair asked it, how do you actually know the actual beneficiaries or the people that supposed to pay for the TV license, which are not paying, but they do have the actual TV license, as it may, because that's where then the potential abuse is going to happen. But also, what determination in terms of the figure of the household that you are using or you are going to be using? Because in the previous presentation, Chair, nobody also likes to talk to the informal settlement. I know that to bias the rural communities, but there are informal settlements in our areas. And also, they do have TVs. And what then the definition of the household thereof? Are we taking the formal houses or are we also including them? And I know, Mina, with my layman understanding in terms of the TV sets that you go to the supply of TV to the shop, that is all you're going to get, because we're also going to get those ones who have been stealing the TV sets and selling them also, because those ones are not necessarily paying for the TV licenses. But I'm relating that in terms of the number, in terms of the TV sets that we have throughout the country. But linked to that and the importance of this issue of the TV licensing, that are those ones, what you could do with those ones. Because they might not necessarily, because they are also subscribers of MNET and so forth, but it's because they can't afford in any way. And also they can also survive without affording, because nobody, there's no clear track in terms of those ones who are paying. I know that SAPC will say they are doing that, but there are those ones who are getting away with that. The issue of the training, of installer training project one, I know that was a joint one with the SOEs and also with the department, which that we will, when the department is not shy enough to also to present their program, their business plan. Because I picked up from the presenter that they do have a project plan. He is gone now. Honorable Limba was making Chile. Because yesterday it creates a picture that they don't have the business plan. But I'm not talking about DOC, but I'm appreciating that the entities are also picking up in terms of the DOC project plan. There are areas of that responsibility that they need to secure. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and thanks once more for the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to know, please, how much is in the fund, and how many set-top boxes it will pay for, including the installation and the aerial, and if that is sufficient funds for, well, the figure varies between 4.5 to 5 million set-top boxes. Whether it's sufficient funds for that, or whether you're going to have to apply for some more. On the method, the eligibility criteria, please can you tell us what stage of approval that is? Who does it need to go through before it gets presented? If you can just tell us where it is in the process, the whole approval cycle. Applying for subsidies, has there been any thought given to the practicalities of a cell phone application to apply and to receive your receipt? I'm sort of thinking of a piece of paper might get easily lost, but then a cell phone easily gets stolen. So I just wanted to thought through the practicalities and whether that is easier way for people to actually apply for stuff rather than having it paper bound. I think that was all. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Two questions I'd like to ask. The first one relates to this. We keep getting told, given this figure of 5 million per household, and I'd just like to know on what is that based? And have you looked at the latest census figures as well? Has that been taken into consideration, what the census is telling us? Because I know everybody's talking about 5 million, but it's just interesting. It has been asked, my apologies. On your last page, your ending remarks there, you say that the subsidy, the top box subsidy, his process is almost ready for launch. But you haven't told us anything about it in the presentation, really. So, unless I'm not reading this presentation properly, but I don't get a sense of what the process is, what is. So I think we need some more information on this. And so that we can also see whether, in fact, it is ready for launch. But I think we'd need a little bit more reassurance than just what you're saying here. And then just my closing comments. I maintain my skepticism. My skepticism about USASA being able to handle this function. And I say that because, again, I raised this with TDOC. USASA can't even do the things it's supposed to do. And maybe let me repeat it again, that we, on oversight visits that we've been to, you get taken to a telecentre, and the person from USASA that takes you there is quite surprised when he finds it's locked and it's not working. So that's why I'm a skeptic, and I maintain it stance, because I need some reassurance that what's going to be different if USASA can't do untele centres, if USASA can't ensure that they run effectively and carry out its mandate in terms of that, how are we going to do this? Are we using the same staff? Are we using the same people? No, I'm being serious. I mean, really, it looks nice on paper, but if I can take you where we've been, my very first visit to a tele centre, and the person from USASA didn't even know it wasn't operational, but was quite proud to take us there. That's why I'm saying I really have my doubts, and I need a lot more reassurance that USASA can actually manage this. I think you need to be telling us a lot more about what's behind this. How are you going to do it? I think you understand why I have my doubts. But I'm not sure I should drive that home, because we can't afford failure again somewhere else. Thank you, Chair.
I'm in trouble. She's the last one again. Father, I will return.
Let us know. You know, Honorable Maina, you know, she likes to be an advocate. I don't know why. No, Jason, you know, we have been asking similar questions about USASA. I just think maybe we'll get a better response from DOC next time. Now, I just wanted to know why in particular we opted for support. People were asking just now, how are they going to detect that people have paid their licenses and everything? Why support? Maybe there's a reason. Maybe that. You see, I understand USASA, because the mandate of USASA allows the DOC maybe to utilize USASA as a vehicle. And when this decision was taken, nobody knew that there would be these failures that we're talking about. Maybe it's a consideration that should be made, whether if USASA is a valid vehicle for us to utilize. But I just got to say one question. That I'm just concerned, why SAPO? I don't want to mention the other things I know about SAPO, and maybe that I just wanted to get an explanation that will satisfy.
Thank you. Chairperson, one issue which has caused some difficulty even yesterday, DOC was presenting.
earlier this year when USASA was presenting a talk to this matter. There was the issue of the budget versus how many books you can procure. But that was done before the issue of insulation and other areas came in. They maintained the same number even when the issue of installers, aerial and other things came in. When we asked USASA, they accepted that indeed there will be an additional cost, which means you might not have the same number of boxes with the same budget. Yesterday, DOC, when presented, they indicated that, you know, the figures might be the same because of the economy of scale. Probably as we're going to be buying more, that can also offset the additional cost for the aerial installation and the other, for the aerial and the other things which were original were not there. Now, probably it would be much better if that matter is further clarified, because at that time in the committee meeting, we also accepted that there will be a reduction in the boxes. Because now we are adding areas which originally were not part of that. DOC is saying, no, don't worry, the economic scale will offset the additional costs, so we are going to still have the same boxes even if you add the issue of area resource. I'm just raising that because the reason members were asking DOC yesterday was out of your explanation before. Probably it will be fair that you also take us through the same matter so that we understand exactly, because probably that can get certainty to members who say indeed the amount and the boxes as it stands now is what we'll get, because that created the impression that it might not be the same number of boxes practically when procurement is done looking to the additional courses for. Probably that's one issue which I thought just picking up from yesterday engagement and discussion, it will be fair that you also just we get your wisdom around that particular chapter. Just what you have said, Prof.
I'm sorry, Jay. Just one more question to add on my question. You know, a lot of us don't qualify to pay the full amount. The reason why we pay, interpreter's mistake. My question is that if an installer has to come to my home to install the box, do I have to pay the extra amount? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair in the House. I trust you will be able to cover answers on the questions which have been raised. Let me start by addressing the strategic questions that have been asked here in terms of guarantees, in terms of our ability to execute this particular function arising particularly from the experiences that the committee has had with the performance of USASA. I wish, Chair, I could sit this afternoon and say to the committee, oh yes, definitely we will deliver, because it will be an unfair answer to give to yourself. I'm sitting here and I'm saying one of the things that we had said when we presented our annual report earlier in this particular quarter, we gave an indication that a lot has happened at USASA. A lot of investigations have been done at USASA. Part of the investigations that have been done had not only been what went wrong with the funds, but I think part of the exercise that has already come to the fore is the identification of some of the problems at USASA in terms of service delivery, in terms of the staff that you have, in terms of what exactly went wrong, because I would like to separate the irregularities that happened versus the actual delivery that is supposed to take place. The committee would also recall that one of the assignments that you gave us when we came to present our annual report was go back
come up with a plan and indicate to us how you're going to change USASA and what is the roadmap that you're going to use to bring change into the organization. Let me indicate to the Honorable House the fact that we have had a two-day exercise as the new board together with management, and we have tried to craft the way in which USASA should be seen, not only delivering, but also begin to question whether are we delivering on the mandate. Are we doing what we're supposed to be doing? Are we the right people to be executing this function as expected in terms of the Act? And I think sooner rather than later, we'll definitely be ready to come back to this committee. And for me, it would have been a best opportunity for us to begin to answer the questions of guarantees, the questions of the ability to deliver what we have got a plan, and the plan has been interrogated. So one event has overtaken the other. But be that as it may, let me take this opportunity and say the board is well aware of the challenges that we have. The board is well aware of the undertakings that have been made by USASA in terms of delivering on the DTT. And the board has to take responsibility to make sure that these promises that have been made would deliver on. I will not even for 1 minute deceive this committee and say to yourself, we'll deliver. But all I'm saying to the committee is, given an opportunity to deliver on this, call up next time, any time, Chair, and say, because I think one of the things that is missing in this presentation, I must admit upfront, is if you had a project plan on the table, that would also give an indication exactly of what will be done when, what when would be finished by what time, and what are the risks that would be attached to some of the actions that we need to take. So what I can say from where I'm sitting is the fact that, yes, those gaps have been indicated, but to me they link to the ability or any possibility that there might be on yourself being able to give guarantees on the fact that you would deliver on this. Let me be allowed one again to use the language that we use every day in our lives to say, can we be given an opportunity to say the taste of the pudding is going to be in the eating within a certain time frame? So that we can, then the committee can safely say, I told you so, you'll not be able to deliver. Or from our side, we'll be able to say, we promise and we're ready to deliver. One of my opening remarks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, was the fact that one of the things that we've discovered would be, there's no way that USASA can deliver on this project on its own. USASA is part of the team. It is very clear that we hold the fund. We will come to answering questions about the fund. But certain other role players are out there who would be making sure that the fund is applied correctly to the right people, and it is applied correctly, and the members, the community members who are supposed to benefit are going to benefit the way that they're supposed to benefit. So in answering the question about guarantees, in answering the questions about are we going to be able to deliver, in answering the question about skepticism that the honorable members justifiably so can say because of our own track record, may I be allowed this afternoon that soon rather than later can we be asked the same question again, as against the plan that we would have on the table to indicate that what tools or what systems are we putting into place to change USASA to be able to deliver going forward. There are comments, honorable members, that have been said by the honorable members here in terms of the awareness campaign, utilization of the logo. For me, sitting here, I can only say we're taking the advice, we're taking the comment that has been said, and we are indicating that there is no way that we can not take that advice because the necessary logos are not appearing in our presentation, and we're taking that and are going to implement that. One of the things that we're also taking as a possibility to look at is a question that has been raised. Have we ever thought of using cell phones? Maybe there could be other colleagues in the house who may immediately answer that question, but something that we're seeing ourselves, I don't think Thabo may say it has been headed at some stage, but I'm saying this afternoon something that is worth looking at going forward and look at the advantages as well as the risks that are going to be linked to that. As part of the project plan that we are owing definitely the Honourable House is around the risks. Because the risks, once we start talking to the mitigation of risks, one of the things that would be dealt with would be the level of corruption. What systems do we have in place to ensure that we minimize any possible corrupt tendencies that would be coming from the people who are not supposed to be qualifying and would be using the system to their advantage to make sure that they qualify. One of the areas that has been raised also is from the risk perspective is any potential abuses that would be at stake from people out there. Those are things which are, I'm saying openly, we owe this committee and should be able to respond to them within the next day or two in terms of giving a report to yourself as well as the project flag. Certain questions have been asked in terms of, for instance, who will handle the qualification of the people who will be applying to receive the subsidy. The relationship that has been built and that is going to be worked on, SAPO will answer for themselves also, just in case we're misrepresenting the arrangement that we have with them. SAPO will be handling those from their post offices, because we strongly believe that where we stand, unless there are instances, the most remote of areas where we do not have physical post offices, we believe that SAPO has got enough centers or post offices or physical structures that should be able to handle the applications or the people who would be coming in to collect the or seeking to apply for the subsidy. Unless it would seem different by SAPO, but the arrangement and the not only the MOU, but the SLA that will be signing with SAPO, because we'll be signing a sub-level agreement with them to ensure that the applications are handled as they should be, and from time to time will be coming back to us in terms of any gaps that they will be seeing to be arising. I think, Chairperson, as I begin to hand over to my colleagues to deal with some of the questions, and then I'll come back at some stage to deal with the funding part of the question. There's a question that was asked, which I thought also is a question that we need to take on advice. A very valid question to say, if a person from a rural area comes to the post office, applies, pays the 30%, the remaining 30% of the 70% who have paid for the STP, and takes the end, how do we on Mother Earth expect a typical person to carry? We're taking advice that some of the things we might need to begin to introduce is, because it happens in other instances, if I buy a decoder from Mnet or DSTV, I can carry that home because I have the means of carrying it home. But there's no way that I can carry an antenna. There's no way that I can carry certain things. And I'm taking it as advice, we're being advised this afternoon to say, look at another methodology of delivering these things to the people who are supposed to be qualifying for this. So we're taking that as one of the things that we need to be looking at. May I hand over to Thabo, and then Makhosa will also ask.
I love that you don't have the privileges of the government.
Thank you, Chair. I think I fully understand that I don't have those privileges. I think the question on the concession of the TV license and the functioning TV set, there's many ways that we have looked at this particular process. One of them was actually doing what Statistics SA does in terms of going to households and verifying whether you have a TV set, but the resources, the amount of funding that is required for that is extremely high. Now, from our side, what we then looked at was, if we say you have a TV license and you are paying your TV license on an annual basis, I don't think anyone would pay a TV license on an annual basis without having a functioning TV set. Now, the SABC may have a different experience in terms of that, but we use that TV license as our way of proving that the person actually has a functioning TV set, because when they pay their TV license, they pay me for a TV set that they're watching. As I say, the SABC may have a different experience in terms of that. In terms of how many households actually have concessionary TV licenses, The last figure that we got from the SABC was somewhere around the region of 800,000 to 900,000 households that are in possession of concessionary DV licenses. Of course, the latest figures may be different, but this is the last figure that I got from SABC. I think in terms of the 30%, we are governed by the policy that was approved by Cabinet. We are governed by the SOS framework as well, which was also approved by Cabinet. And those two documents, they speak of a 70% subsidy from ourselves, and that the household that is applying for the subsidy will be required to pay the 30%. This is the situation as it stands. This is what has been approved, and we can only work within those frameworks. Of course, we have, under advice from SASA as well, looked at other possibilities, but unfortunately, these are the limitations that we have in terms of it. I think in terms of the question of SABC giving their warehouses, I'll leave it up to them, but these are the discussions that we have with them on a weekly basis in our project meetings. The majority of possible eventualities in terms of what exactly are they. The issue of the license is one that was discussed at length. I think for the past 2 years we have been talking about the issue of a license, a TV license, and understanding that we have from a number of areas that we have visited, rural areas, urban areas, those areas in that we visited, a number of, the biggest concern was that a number of households do not actually have a TV license. Even the households that we are targeting do not have a TV license, and there's a number of possible reasons that happened. I mean, one of the greatest ones was that mostly in rural areas and even in urban areas, you'd find a son buys a TV set for their mother, for their grandmother, for their aunt, and they use their own license to buy that TV set. Now, as they are, the son who bought the TV set does not qualify for a subsidy, but the household where the TV set is actually does qualify for a subsidy. Now, there are those eventualities, there are those cases that we know they exist. Now, unfortunately also, we work within the bounds of legislation, and it said if you have a TV set, you are required to have a TV license. Now, these are the bounds that we are working within, and this is why a TV license was required as a proof of eligibility in terms of this. The other possible eventuality was the issue of when a person comes to apply, they leave their documentation there, they go back home, and then we verify the information. A week later, we tell them that they qualify for a set-top box. They have to travel again to the post office to get their set-top box. Now, that whole process is a time-consuming process, and it costs money for that person because they first need to take a taxi in most cases, take a taxi to the post office branch where the post office branch is a bit far. They need to take a taxi to go and apply. They need to then take another taxi to go and pick up the set-top box. So that's one of the eventualities that we looked at to say this process needs to be as seamless as possible. If post office already has systems in place, they do SASA payments, for instance. They do applications for TV licenses, for instance. If they already have those processes in place, we must tap onto those and make sure that this process is also seamless. If I go to a post office today and apply, if I qualify immediately, I should be able to get a set-top box immediately so that it's one trip as opposed to two trips and so on. There are many other things that we have looked at, and I think SAPO will talk about some of them. I mean, they are developing the system themselves. I think they will talk about some of them. In terms of the question of the antenna, the area itself, whether when you go to get your set-top box, you need to receive an area. Now, we looked at the possibility of the installer actually having that area within them as they do with satellite dishes. But the home factor of the area itself, in terms of the size of the area itself that has been developed, that has been looked at in terms of these horses, is small enough to be carried within the same box as the set-top box. It doesn't weigh that much. It doesn't weigh that much, and the size of it is small enough that it can be carried. Yes, the installer, what they will carry is that the actual pole that is required to install that area. That's what the installer will bring. But in terms of the area itself, the form factor of that area is small enough that they can actually be contained within the same box as the set-top box. The question of also the set-top box, whether it's per TV or per household. From USASA, we are subsidizing TV households. If a household has three television sets, they can only be qualified for one set-top box from USASA. It's a household that we're looking at. We're not looking at the number of TV sets in that household. I think from the technical people in the room might be able to also tell that as it stands currently, if you have three television sets, you probably need three set-top boxes in your house. It's not a matter of you can have one set-top box and connect it to all three TV sets. You will probably need one set-top box per TV set, and unless we have new technologies that have advanced to make sure that is possible. I think the chair has dealt with the issue of the question of SAPO and why we're using the post office. I think she has also dealt with the issue of the potential for abuse of the whole process in terms of corruption and so on. The issue of informal settlements. Now, as we see, we are subsidizing households, but there is the understanding that we have, and we know because we have visited quite a number of places. And we know also from where we come from that you would have a yard that has the main house, and it may have other dwellings within the same yard. You know, you may have back rooms and so on that also house other families. So there are possibilities where in the same yard you have three families that all have TV sets and they all qualify for set-top box subsidy. Now, the issue of that household, I mean, will it not actually disadvantage the other households in the same year? We have a process of needing a proof of address in terms of knowing that we don't duplicate addresses, we don't duplicate households, and you will find that one household is having three set-top boxes, for instance. But there are other special cases that we looked at, and in those cases, we require either a letter from the owner that is actually renting out the rooms and so on. In cases of in rural areas where also there are no addresses, in a lot of the cases, we require a letter from the traditional leader as well. In terms of informal settlements as well, I think it's a similar situation that we're looking at, that there is the proof that is required. Now, we haven't actually dealt with 100% the nitty-gritties of what that proof will be. I mean, what we had said was that it needs to be an affidavit and it needs to be confirmed by a number of neighbors, but there is also other implications to that, but it's something that we are looking at between the DOC and ourselves. I think the question of the funding shall be dealt with. The stage of approval of the qualifying criteria, I think the DOC also mentioned that we made a recommendation to the DOC of the qualifying criteria. We sat with the policy unit with the qualifying criteria. It went through their legal team for the team to look at what needs to be there, what are there in terms of the qualifying criteria itself. At this stage, I'm told from the DOC that all that is left is for it to be gazetted. It's for the minister to actually gazette it for public consultations. on that period of 30 days, and then, but I think the DOC is in a better position to provide clarity in terms of that. The issue of cell phone applications rather than the paper-based one, I think as a team, and DOC has been together with us on this, we looked at this possibility. We looked at the possibility of applications via the internet. For instance, how can we use internet cafes, for instance, for people to apply. Those are things that we are looking at. What we have worked on is basically the application form that you go into a SAPO branch, you apply, and all the papers that you require need to be there, and then we do verification in terms of that. Currently, we have a system. It's not 100% paper-based. There's also electronics to it because we're using the cell phone for communication as well and so on. So it's not that far back in terms of where it is. The 5 million poor TV-owning households. This is a figure that came out from the first broadcasting digital migration policy of 2008. The figure that was continued also in the policy of 2012. The figure of 5 million, I think colleagues that were there at the time might help me out with this, but the minister, sometime back, I'm not sure what year it was, appointed Digital Migration Working Group, which was basically responsible for looking at how South Africa as a country can migrate from analog to digital. Now, what came out of that, based on the figure of 8 million TV-owning households in that period around 2006-2007, what came out of that was that there is a possibility that households that need to be subsidized, the figure is sitting around 5 million. That was based on research that the Digital Migration Working Group did at the time, and they came up with a figure of 5 million, and this is the figure that then went on to the policy. Now, currently, of course, a number of things have changed. The number of TV households has increased from since that time to currently. I mean, the number that is being spoken of currently is 12 million TV-owning households. Of course, in terms of the poor TV-owning households, we expect that to have increased as well. And I think also the figures that came out of the statistics essay in terms of the census have shown that there is an increase in that. We look at what has happened to the economy. Obviously, the number of poor TV-owning households has increased. Now, from just basic calculations that we did, and looking at the percentage increase from TV-owning households, we looked at a figure of about 7 million, but we are not 100% sure in terms of the number, but we have actually engaged with a statistics essay on the matter and requested raw information that we can use to actually determine, based on the census, how many poor TV-owning households are there. We are engaging with a statistics essay on that matter. I think in terms of my mentioning that the process is almost ready for launch. What process is that? We are working closely with the post office, and the post office is sort of an agency that we are signing an SLA with to do the process of applications, to do the process of distribution, and so on. I think their presentation will indicate how ready we are actually for the launch.
Good morning to the house. There was a very good afternoon to the house.
The morning is still young.
I'd just like to quickly respond to the question around the fund and the funding. There is currently, as we said, up to 2015, an allocation of 1.3 billion. Whereas for the 5 million households, we are estimating a requirement of 2.5 billion. This is on the back of the 5 million that we're talking about. Now, if we take into account our estimates of the 7 million on the back of the what we're estimating in terms of the census data, recent census data, you're looking at a total requirement of that's in the region of 5.1 billion. So already you can see you're looking at a deficit of plus or minus 3.5 billion, as I said. However, this is the information that the DOC has already started engaging National Treasury on, and which we hope to receive conclusion in the near future. The other question was around the use of SAVO as a partner. Yes, indeed, Tavos has touched on it. They are a partner specifically because of the extensive reach that they have in the communities that we are ideally subsidizing. It was also our attempt together with the DOC to act responsibly in light of what has happened within USASA. We couldn't let the project down, and we needed to think fast on the quickest and most effective and efficient way to keep the project as close to the timeline as possible, hence the choice of SAPO. Other than the fact that they have dealt with large share schemes in the past quite successfully, therefore the base systems that we needed put in place were there. It was just a question of customizing them to this particular project and getting the project going. We did not have an option to essentially wallow in self-pity. We needed to find a solution as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I hope we have tried to cover the questions. Some of the answers may not have been to the selection of the honorable members. But yes, the most least comment I could make would be, give us a chance, we will deliver. I know there's a lot of criticism, and members at the moment are justified to very openly state that because of our track record, but all we are for is to be given a chance as the new administration in the company to be able to deliver on what we promise together. Thank you for the opportunity this afternoon.
Thank you, Chair. Sneeman, Stain, Lizom. I think you have an aslalo, but Sneeman?
No, thanks, Chair. Having listened to responses, I want to make a suggestion or proposal. I think that, it's clear that we've listened to the responses from the chairperson and the team. It doesn't seem to me there's a proper project plan in place. Well, if there is, we don't have it here. We don't have time frames. We don't have anything. If I listen properly, it sounds like there's no project plan.
I hope the DDG is not leaving here. He's coming back.
He can't leave. He stays in tomorrow. This is a matter of national communicating.
Chair, as I was saying, by own admission, there's no project plan being brought to us. And if there isn't a project plan, then it needs to be put in place quite quickly. If there is a project plan, can we get a copy of it? That's the first thing. The 5 million figure, well, I'm glad now it's being said that it's not correct anymore. It's changed. And I'm surprised that we still use a figure that comes from 2008. Now, if you're saying that the figure is more closely to 7 million, then I would have imagined that, this actually brings to the heart of it, that there's no communication between anybody. Nobody's talking to each other. There's no proper analysis being done, I don't think. Because if there was, everybody would have been coming with the same figure. Everybody's using a figure of 5 million. Now it comes out. This is based on discussion that took place in 2008. We are 4 years down the road. And I find that rather disturbing. So, again, it raises the question again. I don't think this thing's being looked at properly. So I think we need to ask. I mean, when you know, if you look at what Stats South Africa does and other organizations do, they plot on a map, they tell you where they expect the bulk of demand to be from. I think we need that. You need to be telling us, where are you, do you see, where is the concentration of poor households? You need to know that. I'm surprised that you tell us that SAPCO has sufficient outlets, because SAPCO tells us they don't have sufficient post offices. In fact, they tell us they're short of I think it's about 2,000, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm surprised that you're telling us they're sufficient. Have you actually checked? And that's why I'm saying, if you haven't plotted, where do you expect, where are the bulk of poor communities and households situated? Because you also need to be checking whether there is a post office in their location, in their locality where they are located. Is there a post office? So I think that USASA needs to do a lot more work. And that's what I'm saying, Chair. I think USASA has to come back to us quite quickly with a comprehensive report on all the work that they said they're going to be doing. I don't think it's good enough to come and say to us, you know, give us a chance. We don't have the time to give chances, because once the thing rolls out, it must work. You can't then come to us and say, oh, well, sorry, it didn't work. You gave us a chance. It doesn't work like it. It really doesn't. This is using money of the state. And if it fails, you know, so I don't think we don't have the time and we don't have the luxury to say to you, SASA, let's give you a chance, let's hope and pray things work. We need the assurance that it's going to work. And that's why I said project plan and everything else that goes with it, proper detail, proper figures. Thanks, Chair. But otherwise, you know, on the basis of what we've got here, and that's why I said earlier, I am very doubtful. Thanks.
Chair, thank you. I am somewhat concerned that the possible risks doesn't seem to have been thought through. The chairperson mentioned now that basically repeated the question in terms of the risks, but it doesn't appear that it has been thought of as yet, and how to in fact minimize those risks. But something a little bit more fundamental, Chair, maybe this will address some of the Honourable Schneeman's concerns. I've been looking through this again, and I'm beginning to wonder exactly what role USASA is going to play in this, other than perhaps being the purse, holding the purse strings. The application is going to be done at the South Africa Post Office branches. We heard earlier in the responses that they will actually verify those applications. The 30% contribution will be received by the South African Post Office. South African Post Office will then contact the installer. The South African Post Office will then receive the voucher from the installer and will pay those installers. So I'm beginning to ask exactly what is the role of USASA in this entire thing? And if it's just going to be a intermediary in terms of channeling the funds to SABO, then one needs to perhaps relook at it, and it should go directly to SABO. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you. I think Chair, my colleagues are repeating what I said earlier on. But it's quite unfortunate that humble DDG have walked out and is coming back, but I'm sure there is somebody from DOC in this room. Because it's the only hope that one has in terms of DOC, that at least we still have the DDG. Chair, my challenge, fundamental challenge, is the role of DOC in terms of coordinating all these entities here. There's an arm's length coordination, and I do have a serious problem with that. And I'll urge that in a separate sitting of the committee, we discuss that. Because we cannot expect entities to give us hope as if we are presenting their manifesto. It cannot be. That questions the role of DOC being confident enough to take charge of this project on our behalf. Yesterday, I tried to get who's the project leader from the DOC, but I think it's more of an invisible project leader in terms of the warm body. I agree, I don't need that response, because I asked yesterday and nobody had a decent of responding to that. Having said that, Chair, let me welcome also and appreciate the posture of the chairperson. I think I like the way you present yourself, but you are giving an option. My colleagues have covered that, and I'm not speaking for myself, representing some other people from the rural and informal settlement today. I'm not representing elite, because those ones, they can go to the internet, they've got reliable network and other things. Can we go back through the DOC, all of us? Because what has been said in terms of the figures, none of the other SOEs raised that. We perpetually raise the issue of the household and all those things and the issue of the budget, but also appreciating that what all of us are looking forward to have in terms of the gadget, there will be a shift, and the shift, it will be an increase. I think I'll rest my case on that. Hopefully when God looks on outside as South Africans, miracle will happen, like how Jesus Christ was born. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My remarks are basically fairly widely directed. If I was skeptical about the local manufacture program for set-top boxes before, I'm horrified by it now. And I think that we perhaps really need to rethink this whole program. Because working on the figures that we've given now, that we might be subsidizing 7 million households. And yesterday, through the various strange figures that we got from DRC, none of which really added up, but the latest figures seem to be that these set-top boxes with aerial and insulation were going to cost in the region of 960 Rand each. Now that brings just the cost of the hardware that we're going to be giving to these 7 million poor households to 6.7 billion Rand. Now that is before we get involved in any of the soft services. I'm talking about education of consumers, call centers, marketing, training installers and support people, and paying post office to do the logistics. I mean, this is a horrendously over-complex and cumbersome program that is going to cost the taxpayer a vast amount of money to create a window of opportunity for job creation of about 3 years for about 2,000 people. And it's a short-term project. In fact, no mistake, Mnet confirmed it again today, that, and also ETV, that the set-top box manufacturing, not manufacturing, it's local assembly. Let's get that straight. The local assembly operation for set-top boxes and the subsequent complications and costs, and for the number of permanent jobs, the whole reason for this is to create jobs for set-top box manufacturing crowd. And really, it's a horrendously expensive job creation project, and I don't know if the country can afford it, and I really think that we should be applying our minds to importing the cheaper ones and forgetting the return path and all the rest of that sort of stuff. Because by the time the return path and all that is in, if people have got them, they're going to be doing all the internet on their cell phones anyway. So I really think that we should be re-looking at the whole thing, because I think it's unavoidable.
I just wanted to indicate here that the response I got about the SAPO, really is not enough. It was quite vague, that is the reason why what we got here is system and database development that says the relevant business process. And I thought somebody would elaborate on this. And then if this is the reason we are given here of how maybe DOC can explain this better to us, maybe we should take it back to, you see what Honorable Greg has said, quarterly we have SAPO's reports, and what we know about SAPO, maybe it's not what USASA knows, because they think it's post office is the most relevant factor to use, but to us there are problems in SAPO. And as it is right now, no, you shouldn't get frightened to give us your presentation. I can see you are shaking. No, I want to say, Chairperson, we need another response that will really satisfy us. Because it will be maybe a futile exercise to express myself more about this year. Thank you.
No, thanks, member. Members, probably what we must do, because you see that these questions are overlapping between USASA and SAPO. I think probably if SAPO can present, it probably can help us to some of the questions. They seem to overlap. Precisely because the issue raised by members about what we know about SAPO in other provinces where we come from, where in other villages there is no any outlet for SAPO. Now, probably the issue is that if SAPO present, I'm not sure whether they'll be able to tell us what measures they will put in place under those circumstances. Because probably that's why the member is saying what we know about SAPO, which probably SAPO might not know. That when you go to over 15 provinces, because of the 10,000 and whatever determination of putting an outlet, there are villages without some outlet. That's what we know physically, practically in provinces as a hermit. But probably the presentation for SAPO might shed light under those circumstances one then. Because I think that's why members are raising issue about SAPO, because if that is not addressed, and what I'm talking about is happening at the hardcore of rural villages of our country, that's where you don't have a mobile outlet. Practically, we've been there, Northwest, and so on and so on, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and some of these provinces where we were. Probably, that's why my appeal, members, is that probably must give SAPO the chance to make a presentation. Now, to deal with the overlapping question, we might get the responses maybe. If not, we'll elevate the questions again, which members have asked and so on. But the second thing is that the 5 million is what we have been having. The difference now is that SAPO is saying to achieve the 5 million is not the 1.3, it's 2.5 billion. But they are quick to say, if you look at the outcome of the census, probably push the number now from 5 million to 7 million. We then push again the amount which might be needed to cover these people or these people we need to assist in terms of the subsidy. Now, I'm just raising that because this clearly indicates what happened on delayed projects. This thing was supposed to finish in 2011. Now we were in 2012. But again, certain things didn't happen at a certain time. Now we're from a census. Now the census is giving us more headache about additional, plus or minus additional 2 million. And now is the issue of first, do you resubmit another memo to cabinet? Because cabinet has approved 5 million. Unless cabinet memo was saying cover whatever might be the reality at the particular time. If the memo to cabinet was 5 million, probably that need now another memo to cabinet to say it was the reality then that was 5 million, but now it's something else. So I'm just
saying, I'm just raising that to show the delay of the implementation, probably the challenges we seem to be posing from the project itself from time to time and so on. Chairperson, for you, sir, you can respond. But I was interested also to get the SAPO presentation so that some of the issues, because they are overlapping. I hope that even when you respond, but when SAPO comes, you might have to respond again on certain issues which SAPO might not be able to come through their presentation and so on. Maybe SAPO can sell themselves why they were chosen.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The issues that were raised without speaking about SAPO, as we'd be hearing what they would say, I think for me there are four areas that we need to be coming back to research on is around the risks and mitigation of the project plan, as well as better detail and motivation on the funding issue that the Chair has just alluded to right now. And quite obviously, homework that would have to be indicated, even if it's diagrammatically, the plotting of where the households are versus the post offices. And what I've also written for myself here would be what then would be a fallback position. I know it's a wild cat that I'm mentioning, but I think it's a question that we need to begin to ask as part of the risks to say, what if this doesn't work? What else is going to be put in place in terms of the disbursement of the money? I was asking the members of management of USASA as to, because the decision to use SAPO was taken quite some time back, and I asked the question, I said, but why was SAPO chosen? And the answer I received, understandably, was the decision was taken during the time when USASA was at a standstill. Because I would want to believe that it could be that this is the answer that I have. I'm not saying it's the right one, it's justified, but I'm just responding to a question that was asked, but why SAPO by USASA? And quite obviously the motivation given of the assistance that they have, of the assistance that they could give to USASA. So let me keep it at a level check of the undertaking of the things that would be doing and bring back. If I'm understanding this correctly, we need to give the information even before we are called, so that the members can interrogate the information that we're going to give and be in a position for them to make a judgment on the information that we're going to give at the time. Thanks a lot, once again.
DDG, members, can we go to SAPO? Just keep the issues. If SAPO, the responses are not coming, then we'll just hope between SAPO and USASA, because they seem to be sharing the issues closely. Probably because of the role of USASA and the whole issue, it leans more to the service level agreement with SAPO.
Chair, without delaying the program of the day, but I'm not too comfortable in the manner that you downplay the role of DOC in the whole coordination of the project. And I'm hoping, Chair, on Friday, because we still have to report back to Parliament in terms of our readiness based on what we have received here, DOC also will pick up other issues that is their responsibility to ensure that they are in place. So I'm saying, Chair, I would like to send the message to your good self, Honorable Chair, that we shouldn't downplay the role of DOC, because they need to be in charge, because they are the ones that are supposed to be ensuring things happen on our behalf as government. And it doesn't seem like we're taking that on seriously, because SAPO and USASA, we can say whatever, but for me, DOC has to assist these entities also. What support do they give them? In those forums, what do they discuss? And what inform them? How they see that the landscape in terms of issues have changed and review their approaches? Because there's already a delay anyway. Thank you.
Thank you.
2.7 will come into that. The age of DOC will come into that. We'll just pick it. I saw the CEO, Utatu Chris, is here. Welcome, CEO. Chairperson, you also don't go that far. I hope we have recovered very well after the parties of fire. welcome, CEO. I know the chairperson was already got the indication. I was told that another board member will also be around, just the chair on the reason given. But without wasting time, over to you and your team. I can see there are two board members. Okay? I'm not sure who's leading between the two, but whoever's leading must lead.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Nhlamulo Ndlela. I am the ICT chairperson of the board. I have been asked and tasked by the chairperson of the South African Post Office, Ms. George Muhema, who did indeed genuinely fall ill. It was not that he just became ill by the intimidation of having to walk in here, but it was actually genuine.
We never know. Parliament bodies always.
I think in opening, I think it's important to highlight that we have noted the issue with regards to the logo that would need to be adopted on the presentation by the Honourable Member, and will ensure that in our continuous presentations that is also adopted accordingly. I want to thank the members through you, Chair, and yourself for allowing us to give this presentation. In terms of our involvement, it is a very strategic yet important project for the country and for SAPO itself. We are very excited to be part of this project, and we believe it plays a very key role in terms of bridging the digital divide in the country. So we are quite excited in terms of the role that we will play, and also in terms of what we aim to deliver as an entity, as a stakeholder in the overall value chain of delivering this important project. I have here on my left Mr. Chris Legani, who is the CEO of the SAPO Group. But before I hand over to him, I have to introduce my board member, fellow board member, who is also a member of my IT committee, Mr. Shri Patel, who is to the left of the CEO. Welcome, thank you. And I will hand over to Mr. Legani to introduce the rest of the team, and then we can then proceed with the presentation accordingly. Thank you.
Okay, about left, I'm glad today and honored that Honorable Keelan spread. That move quick to the left.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members.
Chairperson, I don't work for SAPO, and I'm also not, I have also not joined the Communist Party.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Today, the presentation will be led by Marieke Lancaster. She heads the project, and she has been with the project from the beginning. So a number of things which probably we may not have institutional knowledge now, she has, because she's been with the project. Supporting me is the corporate governance team, led by Lungi Lose, another two members of his team. I would just wish to highlight that so far, I can say that the corporate governance issues in terms of structuring the project has been done. We are now at the tail end of the software development, and I think that probably what would determine a lot more of what will happen going forward in terms of the success. Marieke will take us through the core three aspects, which is the distribution, up application and payment processes. But in that, she will also just fill some of the gaps, which probably may have been the questions in the past. Not all of them, but she will probably cover some of them. And whatever may have been missing, we will respond during the comments and questions session. Thanks, Chair. I'm sure she can profit.
May I just ask, Chairperson, is it only the first page that was changed with the self-routine, or were there any further changes in the presentation? Because then we have a problem, because both of the copies that we've received actually have a different team. It was not as elaborate as the presentation. I just want to make sure if there are any further changes and if it was just page one. Thank you.
Chair, it was mainly the first page because some of the members we had not confirmed, but they are here now and we felt that we needed to demonstrate that they are here. Apologies for that.
Thank you. May I proceed?
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm sure you've seen the project map. But what it is, this is the total map of the total project, and the legends indicate the role that the various organizations and institutions are playing. So if you look at the little red block, you notice that is the wholesale distribution, and that is the portion that I will take you through. If we then look on the activities, so we've broken it down a little bit, there are four key activities which the CEO has highlighted, which we will focus on. And I apologize if I am repeating issues. In terms of the background, I'm sure this has been covered in detail, so I'm not really going to go through it in much detail, except to say that we've actually started with a distribution flow since February 2012 this year, and we are in the final process of completing it. In terms of the numbers, it's just a repeat, and we said it's a projected number of needy households, and then we further broke it down with the help of USASA in terms of what...
The household does not listen to the report, unless my eyes are failing me. Hola, Bushnima.
Okay, it wasn't your eyes failing me. It wasn't putting up my hand. No, but to a more serious note, this presentation is substantially what's there. Is substantially different to what we have here. And, you know, if the rest of the document is different, we did get this prior, so we have read this, but it's difficult. Can't compare. And the other problem as well, if I may, is this while I'm talking, not that we want other brochures, but it is very difficult to even later on follow this diagram when you put your back or go back to associate the colors to the blocks. So I think we would need these two pages if we could please to get these in color so that we're able to track and follow what this is. Thanks. But the report is different.
Can someone explain what happened about the document? You see, Honorable Ken, this is a question whether that was the first page or not. We moved, but I started to see other things. Honorable Schneeman correctly so. What might have happened in terms of the pages? Can someone help us to understand how big is the issue? So that
Honorable Chair. If I could just walk across just to condemn, because I think the
you can cross the floor.
service?
Honorable Doctor?
You know, at this time, we don't need this. The bodies are tired. And we had people waiting for a long time, and they could have ratified whatever. Can you get an explanation what is happening so that we take a decision?
You said you are leading Pendula Tan. Does he all can respond?
Thank you, Chair. I think first and foremost, we'd like to apologize for the slack pause and for the error in terms of the slides. More than anything else, I think we may have had just a technical error rather than an actual omission. So we do apologize for that. I do not believe that the rest of the presentation will change. So please accept our apologies. It's something that we'll rectify moving forward. And indeed, it is not our standard. And that if there is any challenges moving forward, we'll certainly rectify that. So apologies for that, Chair.
This is a background which is different from the one we have. Can you process anything? No, I'm meaning you present the proceeding. We don't want a bad copy.
Thank you, Chair. This slide, I've only tried now when the question come up once so well. I've added that little portion to say, I think we've got a fully functional online branch network that's accessible to every resident. It may not be in the most remote areas in the villages. However, it is the nearest financial institution in those areas from a national perspective. Our distribution network also covers the most remote, including the informal areas, from a distribution and a courier perspective. When we talked about this, it was all about the capacity, the experience, and the skills, as we have proven by delivering similar big BBBE share scheme for the private industry, but from MTN, Vodafone, Telkom, SAB, and quite a few others. In terms of how we approach this process, we've developed a very high-level process flow to understand the roles that every party is playing, and then breaking it down into detail. So from a SAPO perspective, what we are focusing on is the qualification criteria and how we build that into our systems to take away the subjectivity. And therefore, there are certain defined business rules that we also build in. We do have a television license process in place currently with SABC, where we renew licenses and also do new applications. We have done the application process in terms of a person coming into the post office and applying for it, very similar to what we've done with the share scheme. And then the sixth one is the payment. And the payment is nothing different from what we're currently doing for quite a few million customers in terms of paying the bills. Then in terms of the distribution and the delivery, that we are doing through our CFG, our courier arm, because they are currently delivering mail parcels to every single post office throughout the country. Then the installation and support services, and I'll talk through some of the support that we are providing. And I'll also talk about the exchange and the replace of foggy equipment. Okay, we have concluded the MOU, as you've seen from the USASA presentation. And as this has not changed at all, it really says what are the responsibilities of DOC in conjunction with USASA, and it's to finalize the qualification criteria and the business rules for us to actually implement, ensure that all the material and service relating to the boxes are provided on consignment in line with the terms and conditions in the service level agreement, and then be responsible to pay post office the agreed remuneration for the services. In terms of post office obligations, It is to capture and process all the applications for the registration, to set up and manage the qualification criteria database, facilitate the distribution of payments, and the voucher is for the installers. We just call it something else. We call it a voucher. And delivery process of the boxes, and then the standard antenna and satellite dishes. We also facilitate the following with regard to the installation and the support services, the whole application process, and in the application form you'll notice that we've said that we will provide assistance to our customers in completing the forms. Then set up and management of the installation service databases, notification to the register installers to go and complete the installation once the complete 30% has been paid, payment of installation fees on receipt of the sign-off of the verified installation voucher, and then also exchange and replace faulty coders should there be. Submit daily the applicable data and the payment files to the SABC in terms of licenses and your SASA, and then also transfer daily and electronically all the funds collected on behalf of the DOC into a specified bank account within agreed period. The MOU was signed off on the 26th of July this year, and we're currently busy or in progress to finalize a service level agreement that will take care of the performance measurements between the different areas. Now, after we signed off the MOU, we've had a huge workshop that was held with DOC, USASA and SABC to discuss and formulate all the business rules, and we've covered the following areas in detail. We set up the qualification database on behalf of USASA, mapping of the TARPA branch network with the radio station, satellite area, the type of signal, the location of the needy households per municipality area to determine the number of needy households in the area, to determine the number and type of the STB, and marketing material to be distributed per post office outlet. And I think someone asked earlier, how are we gearing our warehouses? We actually need to do all these mapping so that we know what boxes to distribute per area to a post office. It doesn't help you distribute a box and the signal is not correct. So this is a whole lot of work that's currently in progress in mapping it so that we do that and getting the warehouse to accept and send out the right information. We have designed the registration application and the installation voucher that's required, and I will take you through that. We've also looked at the order and distribution process and the related equipment in terms of what is required from a warehouse, how will it come into the warehouse, and actually how we will distribute from the warehouse to the post offices. We are busy looking at the communication and the marketing of the campaign and what needs to be displayed in the SABO branches in terms of posters, pamphlets, educational material. We've also looked at processing, how we're going to process the application in accordance with the qualification and what are the system requirements that we need to build in to do that. Same with payments. We are busy setting up the installer database on behalf of USASA. However, that is one issue that is outstanding, and I've added it the last area because we haven't got the final data yet. We can't populate the database, but the database is ready to be populated. Then notification process to the installer to arrange the installation. And without going into detail, once a customer has paid his subsidy of 30% or applied and is successful, we will then send an SMS to the closest installer that will now know he needs to go and actually install the decoder. Verification of the installation. So once I have done that, the household sign off on it, and the installer sign off on it, and then bring it back to SABO where we will then pay the installer. We've looked at the whole process to replace and exchange. It may be that a box is distributed where there's a certain signal, and then the signal is on the border and the signal is different, so we need to replace the box and with another one that's relevant to that specific area. So we've covered that. We've also looked in detail in terms of the daily processing of the data from all the offices and then bring it back the same way that we
actually reconcile on a daily basis for our third-party payments. The transfer funds to a designated bank account. Now, one of the issues that we're asking, what is outstanding currently from the qualification criteria? There's only two things outstanding from our perspective, and that's the installer data and then the final implementation date from DSC. Apart from those two issues, everything has been finalized. In terms of the license issue, when a license is taken out for the first time, the full tariff is required to be paid. We did talk about concessionary TV licenses, people older than 7 years, etc. We do currently have processes in place to issue a new license. We can renew licenses as a once-off per year, or people can be allowed to pay off their TV license over a period of 12 months. Those processes are currently in place, and we've got systems with SREC where we verify and we pass the data on. And we will use exactly those same processes that we've built into the process flow to verify whether a person has got a license and then allow him an opportunity to take out the license before he actually do his application. Maybe just to give you an update on the status of where we are, this is a high-level extraction of our project plan. The project plan is quite detailed. When we compile the project plan, we do it as a joint effort between us, USASA and SABC, because we're so dependent on each other. As the CEO has mentioned, item 1, 2, 4, are all the governance issues that are all 100% done. In terms of our business through workshop, that has been done through with all the parties. Finalize and approval for the application and vouchers, we're 98% done. The only issue is the final verification once the business rules have been gazetted and all the qualifications have been gazetted. It's just to finally check that document before we will go to print. I'll show you the document. And then the finalization sign-off, again, quite far. There's only those two issues that we need to do. Scope, charters, project plan, schedules, 90% done. Our SLA with all the parties, we've already 60% done. The biggest issue, again, is the implementation date that we need to put in. And then we need to finalize the rollout plan per municipality, per signal station, and satellite areas per SAPA branch to determine the number of needy households which we will service from a branch to get a perspective of that. And we, the GIS system has been developed. We have already mapped all the post offices onto the GIS system. It's been developed. We now just need to add the data and determine the numbers. Then, we need to finalize all our marketing-related issues, and in the marketing-related issues, we're talking about the application, the voucher form, the display materials, the branding, pamphlets, educational pamphlets, posters, everything that will actually go into the post office to assist. The other outstanding issue has been just the distribution issues in terms of the equipment, the packaging, the ordering, the warehousing. And as I said, once we know the numbers, we know how to gear our warehouses and which must go to what warehouse. In terms of the IT development, we've commenced with the development, even though some of the things are not quite yet finalized, but we feel those are things that we can manage in the next few weeks. Our system at this point in time will be completely ready for testing in another 6 weeks' time. So we anticipate to be ready from a system perspective by mid-January, in January. Training, you'll notice that is 25%. We've already started with all the information that's available to us to start preparing training manuals for our sellers. And in the training manuals, we look at two areas. We look both from functional knowledge as well as then from a system knowledge. And these documents are then constantly updated. So we have got the final dates. We will then go to print, and every single teller will get a document as well as physical training
and we do our counter training for what we call trained tellers. So we'll train certain people and they will train the tellers again. Call centers have been geared, so those are ready, and we will also train them in terms of both functional and the system knowledge. At the moment, our implementation is the only thing that is zero, and that is all dependent on the final implementation date. But as I said, we expect that we're going to be ready at least month to two before the actual implementation date is announced. Maybe I can just quickly show you what the application form looks like. And this is really, as I said, the draft. But here you can see how we're actually applying the qualification criteria and starting the business rule. So the questions that we will be asking is whether a person is a South African citizen. Now, if the question is yes, the system will allow you to proceed. If the question is no, the system is going to stop you at that point. So a transaction cannot be completed and a person cannot apply for a box. You have to put in your South African ID number, and we do have verification rules on that. Title, initials, contact details, especially a cell and home, because we're going to use the cell to actually inform them via SMS that where we were about to. Street name, addresses, SABC TV license number, which once you key it in, the system will verify it with the SABC, whether that's a valid license or not. If it is, it will continue. If not, we will then stop the transaction at that point. The number of the combined monthly income per household. Now, once again, depending on what I put in there, we don't want to put the amount up there. We explain that in the terms and conditions. But if it is more than the criteria, the system will stop. If it's less, it will continue. In terms of verifying certain information, this is what the teller will do. We see post office use only. So is a certified copy of the ID or passport attached? Have we checked that the client has a TV license? We might make that quite upfront to people to know that we're going to check that. Did the client sign the form and work proof of monthly income to hide it? Now, if any of those are no, we're then going to say we need that, and the customer has to go back, give us that information before we will actually proceed. We've also built in accountability, so the name of the teller and the checking officer. So if something do go wrong, we do have a method of determining accountability and responsibility. From a checkbox installation, once again, that is in that will the customer and the installer will actually complete after they have installed it. They will then bring it, and you'll notice there are pad labels, etc. From a system perspective, every application will get a unique barcoded number. So when it comes back, we scan the barcode and it brings up the original transaction so that we've got a complete order trail right through the process. It is not a separate process. It's a seamless single process. Then at the back, and I think this is why it's not been finalized, these are all the qualification criteria at the moment as we have them. But as I said, depending on what is entered and the final things, this may change. So we've put in there what are the rules. Less than, they must earn less than 3,200. They must own a functional TV set and it must have a valid TV license. So these are the rules, declarations, and then the installation certificate we will also do. So again, you can see the barcode and the back label. So in all the documents, will be a single. We will know, for example, what were the decoder numbers to which person it was issued, who was the installer that has done that, have they done it, have we completed the transaction. And all of that data is being stored in the database from where we will run the reports for DOC and USASA in terms of where are we in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Marika. Thank you, Jen. I'll now allow the members if they have any questions that they'd like to raise from the presentation that they can do so now. Thank you.
here you go, most of your answers from your papa are somewhere else. Honorable Sliman, Kilen, Shin, Lane, become.
Thank you very much, and thanks very much to the team from SOPO for the presentation. I was quite interested. Firstly, just to put out something. On your, you've got two.
Remember the issue of the confusion of a document. To be honest, the document we have is a document which was sent. It's just that they decided to be proactive and type in information. That's what confuses everything. But of course, they gave us the right document. But someone decided to be creative and type in new information as it were happening. That's where the confusion was. So the document is the same document we had already.
Yeah, on your, you've got two of these slides, I think, diagrams. Thank you, Judy, for your help. And on the second one, I'm now comparing it to the diagram, should I say, from DOC, and it doesn't tie up, because DOC says that the functions of the post office will be around wholesale distribution, retail, on-ground support, and talks about go-live. These are the blocks that are highlighted in red in the DOC diagram. But in your diagram, you've also included installations. So I'm just raising, it might be an error on somebody's side, I'm not sure, but a little bit of an indication that the two are not talking to each other. So maybe you could just have a look at that. But the real issue that I wanted to raise is, it's pretty much what we were raising earlier, as to, I think somebody else raised this too, what really is USASA doing? And I want to point out a few things. USASA tells us in their presentation, they find an MOU, and they tell us that they will be managing the ordering of set-top boxes from appointed manufacturers and payment of subsidies through SOPO. Now, I have here the implementation process. And here it says, where's it here? Hold on. I think I've got this way. Let me just get the heritage here. The business rules, SOPO business rules. And here it talks about that SOPO, if I'm not reading it incorrectly, will handle the order and distribution process for set-top boxes and related equipment. Now, I'm not sure who's doing what. But the two are talking across each other. If you go through this presentation of the post office under their business rules page, there's a number of things that they're doing on behalf of USASA. Post office may as well be doing it themselves. So that's why the question is, what really is USASA doing? Other than just transferring funds, and if that's the case, if that's what USASA is meant to do, is to transfer the funds, etc., then you just need a small team. You need a proper, well-oiled machine that deals the finances. But it looks like all the other things are being handled by the post office. But what I found quite interesting is, you know, I raised the point early on during the USASA presentation, and I did say that, you know, have they not mapped out where these households are situated. Now, with due respect to the chairperson from USASA, with due respect, the chairperson of USASA says that we will have to do that. And we will come back to the committee, we will map out. Now, I'm not sure whether USASA and the post office talk to each other. Because here, it actually tells us that the post office, South African post office, part of the implementation process is to finalize mapping of DT rollout plan to municipality, signal areas per separate branch to determine the number of needy households per branch? That's the exact question that I put to USASA. And USASA tells me, or should I say answered us, to say they'll be doing it, but then yet the post office is doing it. Now, maybe it's good that everybody is here today and yesterday. Maybe it's good because had they been here independently, maybe we would have seen a duplication of work. The point I'm raising, Chairperson, I don't think there's much communication going on. It goes back to the point that was raised earlier about the centre. We're holding this whole thing together. But certainly, you know, in a very simplistic way, we could almost as a committee say to you, so thanks very much for coming. Please continue with your normal work. Because really, there doesn't seem to be much of a role for them. I say it very simplistically, because I'm sure there is some work that they have to do. But really, you know, I think that it's clear that most of this work will be done by the post office. And I just want to ask the two chairpersons, please communicate with each other so that you both know what your organisations are doing. Otherwise, you're going to do double work. Thank you.
Thank you, chairperson. Chairperson, I want to align myself largely with Honourable Schneeman, but I just want to come to say that I think there is a little bit of a colour difference in the block. And maybe it takes a woman to identify that because we, you know, men are notoriously colourblind. I noted
that.
It's a different type. It's a brick red. It's a different colour red. If I look at the SABU map as presented by the DOC, and I look at the one as presented here, can we see there at the bottom, that's a brick brown, the installation block. So I don't think that. I think the red blocks actually correspond. So just to say that is how I see it, and I hope I'm correct. But then secondly, I would like to move on to the issue of where the Honourable Chairman has absolutely laid his finger right on the problem.
We are going to issues of men. We have finished the women issues, okay?
Chair, quite frankly, I think the time has come to ask SABU if they will not perform better without having to fulfill effectively an agency role for USASA. Because if I look at the project plan, they're essentially just collecting and then have to pay over, etc. So they are effectively fulfilling an agency role, and the one critical element of their plan, of the SABU plan, that I fear is going to make it possibly collapse, is item 10, where you rely on USASA to provide the mapping for the DTT rollout. That's dependent on statistics from USASA, and we're saying that it's 50% complete. So that is where my fear lies. I can see the other percentages on that same page. It's not too disconcerting, except that 25% on training could be a little bit of concern, because I think if we talk about next year, it's only a several months away, then I think you should maybe devote more time to that. But the issue that I'm really concerned about, Shepard, is the roll-up of municipalities, you know, and that is essentially one of the issues that were raised by several members. How do we locate these households? And the concern is, if USASA up to this stage has not been able to present that as part of their responsibility, then I feel that is a weakness. That is, your plan is just as good as your weak link. And that could be the weak link that we identify here. Okay, and as for the rest, I must say I went through, unfortunately the pages are not numbered, but start with business rules again. We look at that there, the first one, set up a qualification database on behalf of the sample. Then we go down, we set up an install database on behalf of SASA. Then we say daily processing of data and payment file for transmission to USASA and the SABC respectively. And then transfer of collected funds to USASA. So the issue is, will it not make your life easier
you don't have to do that. But you actually accept the responsibility for everything, and you don't need to report and do it on behalf of yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I don't need to repeat any of that. Because I think it's an issue that we discussed basically since annual report time as to what is the role of USASA and it's, whether it has any ongoing value to the cluster, as it were. But I've two questions directly to the post office. Obviously, your stock of set-top boxes that you're going to be shipping around the country for distribution are a very valuable target. I'm wanting to know what if there is going to be extra security for this, because obviously the retail value of set-top boxes is more than direct mail bumps that you carry. So obviously they're good targets. Is there going to be extra security in your vans? Are you going to have extra security on your holding areas, your storerooms or warehouses or wherever you're going to keep them, and will these be rolled out from, let's just say, a district warehouse to the post offices themselves, or how will that work, and what will be the security around that? This is obviously a huge cost and a huge risk, and not only for physical storage, but security guards and extra insurance and all that sort of good stuff. And then with the sort of perhaps phased rollout of DTE, will you be liaising your sort of with Centec as such to sort of map that your push or your stock of set-top boxes and your development of the support structure for it will be in sync with the rollout of signals? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to repeat what my colleagues have said. Except once again question the actual responsibility and the role of the SARA. And it's in light of the fact that we, during this whole process, Chair, we haven't even touched on all the associated costs involved. We've picked up problems with budgets just to deliver the actual hardware, so to speak. And no way, and I don't think to any great depth is any work gone into what all this, the associated costs are going to be. The branding, the packaging, the marketing, the printing, the warehouse, the admin work, all those sorts of things. In my humble opinion, Jefferson, I believe that the South African Post Office is uniquely positioned to do exactly what they've indicated that they're going to do. They've got the footprint, they've got the experience, our community are familiar with them. Besides the fact that they probably need the revenue as well. I actually want to go one step further and in the final analysis suggest that they even look at becoming almost a retailer to the people that don't qualify for subsidies. So if I wanted to pick up a set-top box, I must have the option of actually going to my closest post office as an additional form of income. I found very little problem with the presentation, with their progress. It's the sort of thing that I wanted to see almost from entity to entity, telling us exactly what they're going to do, what their status is, where they are. Thank you.
Ms. Bum.
Chair, thank you, Honorable Chair. I must say I've heard that if an entity in certain area does work or perform well, we do say that. I don't want to make a reference to whom we appreciated the presentation and all that. Because it's a little bit afternoon, some of us might be tired. Two, Chair, in relation to ever-growing potential financial implications in the whole scheme of things, in terms of post office, are we going to be delivering the set-top boxes with the vendors or the producers or the manufacturers are going to deliver to us, then there's a cost to the implication.
What about the tongas? We're talking about the vendors.
No, I was just going to deal with the process, Chair. I'm saying that I agree with my honorable member, the last one before me, in terms of there are other costs that I'm not too sure when we're going back to the issue of the cost, because we have approved a fixed amount. Who's going to bear the cost of interest of all the other role players? This was not directly to the post office, but also to all entities. For me, it gives the conclusion that the end intended beneficiaries, the number is going to be lesser, because we say that we are competing with other service delivery needs, so we don't have money, and then we put it in the commerce chain as a pilot project, if I may, so that nobody complains. But also in terms of, which I would like to know, in terms of the 70% that USASA will give it to, this 70% will come from, coming from Treasury, it goes to DOC, I hope not, it goes directly to USASA so that you also cut down the administrative cost. But I'm seeking clarity on this one because I'm using my common sense, which I know is totally wrong. And then USASA, with the applications of the people that are supposed to benefit, the 30% through the post office, then pay for the gadget or pay the manufacturer. Is it going to be COD? What will happen to that? Because I just want to understand that. What does this actually 70-30% covers actually? I know it has been out in terms of installation, but I'm trying to be a little bit broader than that. It also boils down to the budget that we have. But also, I'm disturbed with the post office. They don't also say how much they've projected the whole service that they're going to provide on behalf of users, or on behalf of us as a nation, rather. Let me put it nicely. Chair, it will also also go to the issue that has been raised in terms of security. If then it happens, if we're going to get this set-top boxes before the applicant qualifies to benefit, which means there's a potential of being stolen. Oh, yeah, I don't want to say corruption, because that one is also some of us will understand in a different way. If then these boxes have been stolen, or whoever has stolen them, is it going to be possible for them to be used or other people to benefit? How do you then, in terms of security code, whatever it is? But I'm sure that one is more of we haven't I think, no, it should be within the standards anyway, what I'm asking, in terms of the top boxes, so that we make sure that budget is useless if somebody steals it, the wrong beneficiary, in terms of that. In terms of the call center, that goes back to the question that you've asked on observation, that seems like nobody's communicating to anyone, but we do also sit in forums together. Probably we hear each other, but we don't listen to each other, so that we can cover or deal with the issues of overlapping and all that. So I'm asking, is the call center that has been presented here, the internal call center that is in existence, or the call center for the DT project? The last one, Chair, from me is the one that I believe you have raised it earlier on. I'm just picking up again in my own way here. To say where I'm coming from, or where I was born in Eastern Cape, and when I go home, I pass my 30 and game Gambalana. So, which means then I pass my clear Bob Fletcher, that has got a post office, but in terms of the infrastructure capacity is questionable. That's an only post office that you can get, other than going to Machia, Mutata, the other side. are we going also to use how I get my post when I'm at home, when I go to the shop once a week and get so I'm dealing with the issue of readiness of our infrastructure as a post office. In a true sense, not to give us what we think that we should hear here and be honest enough so that we know that in terms of the distribution also, we are actually ready and ready as it's supposed to be. If I mean infrastructure, I mean in terms of the IT, because there's other information that we need to fit in the system so that we can communicate with other departments like what you have alluded to without making an example. I'm sure that other partners will respond to some of the questions. It's not necessary for only post office this one. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Honorable Tom.
Don't come back. Lord Chairperson, we welcome the presentation by post office. It is quite clear to me that we need better communication amongst the stakeholders. They seem to be working in silos. I just needed to know one thing, Chairperson. With all the responsibilities that post office has agreed to contribute to this set-top box issue, do they have the capacity, of doing this? I'm asking this because, by the way, we have a post office here in Parliament. And I know that the personnel there is really overstretched. And just by a few people, by us, you find that she has a handful, you know, she can't do everything on time. Now I'm thinking of the post office that I saw when I was with you coming from Northern Cape. This is a lot of work that needs a special attention, Chairperson. Now I wanted to ask from post office, do they see themselves as they are now going to be able to do this? Whether they need more staff. Also in terms of storage, Chairperson, the very post office I'm talking about, the one that has got drugs coming from underneath the boxes, you know how that post office looks like. And where are you going to store these gadgets? And I don't think it's the only one.
So just in there, that might eat the boxes.
I know I'm talking about the post office, I see. The only post office that could really do this is the one in Shiawelo, in Soweto. But the post office that we know about near you, in terms of storage, no, Baba, I'm good. You mentioned on your forms here that you've got a column for cell phones, and this is going to be utilized for information to the applicant of whether it's approved or. So I wanted to know, for instance, if people don't have a cell phone, what are you going to use? Some people can't afford cell phones. And they don't have landlines at home. How are you going to deal with this? Chairperson, I really think that what we have been asking here and what we have heard is enough for us to see that we lack somehow
in terms of the readiness that we are talking about. And this all only boils out to one thing, that we need the DOC to be heads of, so that they review some of the decisions that they've taken. Thank you.
I think, remember, the post office, you have to respond, but please just respond to direct questions, no preambles and other things. But one thing which I'm interested to know, what is it which you can do without yourself? To be quite honest, do you really need yourself for the data which you want to get from yourself? I'm saying practical. I'll tell you why I'm raising these issues. I think the chairperson of USASA has been honest. They are facing a mountain to climb in USASA. They've got other challenges. I'm trying to say, if much of the things can be taken from them so that they focus on building the organization. I'm not saying that necessarily because of the skepticism and other things. I'm just saying in reality, we know as a committee that we requested them to go and develop a plan in terms of how to turn around the USASA. So I'm asking that question in that context to say how much workload you can offload out of USASA. I know the difficult things about that anyway, they cannot be removed out of the picture completely because of the necessary requirements in terms of the funding and the other things. But I'm just saying other things which can be just be offloaded off you further, so that as the chairperson was indicating, that they are trying to turn around this organization. You've got this thing also which seems to be a major project, which also they need to manage, so that there is a reduction around of that particular space. And so probably if you can also, because the only thing I would say is that we have is that you see the question which members are raising from Schneeman, Lisoma, and so on, it is because you have not built in risk on your plan. Risk number one, you got post office are not online. We are talking about the application where you fit in, it accepts return. Whether there will be what message, that's the risk, because some of the post office are not online. We know them. They are not online and so on. You got the issue of storage, some of the post office don't have that capacity. Probably all what I can say is that in the play you have not built in the potential risk which you might face as a post office, so that you're able to mitigate those particular areas. The other issue, the one which I was raising, that there are villages without a retail or whatever, anything which is post office. But you didn't build it in terms of your plan seeks to say your post office are seeming to be anywhere online connected and everything is fine. But in reality, there are, some of them are not online. Some of them, there's no storage. Talking about the red one, we saw somewhere, issues and so on. But I think that probably from my side is that is what probably one can appeal, that you work on the risk which we all know that exists within the post office, and how are you going to mitigate those risks? Because if you don't do that, it might become a challenge in terms of you executing your master plan, which we have provided and the other things. That do that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Nimro, honourable members, for your questions and also your comments and amendments as well. I think what we'll do is we'll probably go through questions with the CEO in response, as well as the CIO will also come in and assist. But I think in terms of addressing the issue of the post offices that are currently offline, we are embarking on a network upgrade, where we aim to conclude that process as soon as possible to ensure that we have the necessary redundancy that's required for those port offices to be brought online, so to ensure that we can then deliver the service of the application port. So we are currently ongoing with that project, and it's well on track. I think with regards to the issue of the collaboration with USASA, I agree that we need to step up and engage a whole lot more.
In answering your question, I think it's going to be important to understand in the declaration what USASA would like us to help them with, and we would be duly, as a strategic and as a company within the portfolio, assist where we would then assist and capacitate where we need to. So I think that's going to be important in that collaboration to understand where could the shortcomings from their side and how we could assist. And I think also, with it being a collaboration, it is important to also understand where they could help us in moving forward. So that collaboration will also unpack that particular approach in terms of how we address that. CEO, I'll leave it to you to answer the first question around the...
You gave the CEO a difficult one.
Hence, we brought him on board, Chair.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I would go question by question and try and cover as much as we can, and my team will assist. There are a number of questions which speak to the role and responsibilities which were agreed upon during the discussion with USASA. I will get Mariki to cover those because they go into the detail as to what was the process at that point in time. This will include the mapping of the household, the router outland capacity. It includes security. To a point, at this point in time, let me do it logically, otherwise I will confuse them. Please rather do one time. It was not the intention. Yes. I wish to, upfront, I acknowledge that probably if we have to look at this process slightly differently, we need to appreciate that volume will drive the demand and the distribution. In other words, if we have an appreciation of beyond the fact that there are challenges as to whether it's 5,000, 6,000, or 5 million, 6 million. If we have a of 10 million. If we have a pre-approval process which indicate quantitatively where we locate all those who demand the services, we will probably one step come closer to whether the sensor says this or that, because now we're dealing with locality at where it happens. That then begins to determine a number of things, which some of them we haven't covered quite well, one being the associated cost. I do not believe that we have done that quantitatively enough to be able to say what are the, you know, the associated costs, except the fact that we're part of the chain and something which we probably need to ourselves to evaluate. Because what does it mean? The security we have already may require some upgrade. So this is the level of assessment which we need to do, which I do appreciate we need to do something about. We also, with the numbers of where the need is, we are able to, given our logistics capability, we deliver almost more frequently daily in some areas the main part of our business. We are able to map that delivery against the capacity we require. I do not believe that it will add value for other post offices to have all the boxes at the point of use, rather at the manufacturer. Try and concentrate the risk in one area, which is at the manufacturer. Then deal with the risk in transition and at the risk at consumption. In other words, where the customer pick up the unit. These are some of the things which, as late as the process is, I believe we should be paying attention to. Having Mariki to cover the mapping, I think the chairperson has covered the role of the agencies in terms of how we believe we should integrate with the platform. Probably in that integration, safe to say, we need to understand what our competencies are, and where probably we could pick up from each other in terms of finding the right role and the right responsibility. In terms of training, it is correct that probably it is a concern right now in terms of the delay factor. My advice to the team will remain that we need to do that as close as possible to the rollout. The challenge is that training, once people are trained, and when the project starts, you have to retrain them, which can add to the cost. So we will start doing some of the training, but we'll have just to be cautious that we don't train too late that we have to retrain thereafter from cost point of view. But it is noted in terms of how far we have progressed. There was a comment on the admin cost in terms of payment from the process point of view. I'll just get my colleague Mariki to take care of that. There was also a comment on the units which could probably, when stolen at and the code, whether usable. I think Mariki, if you can cover that. And the call center. The chairperson has commented on the rollout of the infrastructure in terms of the IT component thereof. I can confirm that chairperson correctly so. About 800 of our base doesn't have connectivity. So it will be very important for us to understand the implication of that. Again, the rollout, which the chairperson has highlighted in terms of infrastructure, to show that gap is covered, because that remains a risk in terms of coverage, I have to admit. All the ones which have got capabilities for banking and banking services, who have at this point in time the capability to do these processes which we have outlined. But going forward, we need to understand that implication to us. That's one of the risks that I do believe we have to cover. The agencies which are there cover the main component, which is our GSF obligation. But obviously, with this as a factor, we need to appreciate that in terms of time. And there was a question on capacity. What we have done in the last 2 weeks was to go through all our outlets and understand the load of work to date. Honorable members, it will be inappropriate for me to say we have total capacity. But what we have done, we said, of the staff we have and the work they are currently doing, what is the level of utilization? We came to an average number of just about 75% utilization, and we said to ourselves, by the fact that there will be peaks during the day, we will start by saying that we have some capacity. It is if the number of units, whether 5 million or 7 million, is an issue at hand. But this is something which we have to really appreciate, that it's not a straight line. So it's not a straight day. You know, people come in the morning and they have to go back home, depending on how they come to where our post office is at, because it's not necessarily that they are very close. It's, you know, then that the target now of the outlets which have connectivity are still lower, from if I take the 800 with of connectivity. The storage component, I covered it to some extent, although I should admit that, if the demand was the highest than the projected in terms of volume, and we don't understand that well, that will need to be a strong factor. However, my approach and the team is to try and minimize infrastructure increase at the cost of it on the basis purely for this project. Because one, we don't want to build off capacity and later on we have capacity for, which is high security, high requirements, yet we will not use it fully as when the project is low, it's rolled out. Although we will still need this continuous demand, but it will not be at the same level in the beginning. And then lastly, the cell phone notification, I'm sure Mariki can cover that. Honorable members, if I've missed something, I would really respond accordingly. Mariki?
It's low.
If I can...
Maybe just on the mapping issue, as I said, we 50% completed. We've built the database,
And we are meeting with USASA on a regular basis. Actually, every Friday we've got progress meeting. So hopefully we will put special effort on this so that we get it finalized and get the numbers out of there. From a security perspective, Chair, we're addressing security on three layers from a warehouse perspective.
Hold on just for a minute. A member, is there any specific direct response you need from you? No, it's okay. You can proceed.
Thank you. From a security perspective, we address it on three issues from a warehouse. Our people are gearing up for additional storage and security officers to be there, and I'll explain the process now. From the offices as well, and from the vehicles, we've put the tracking devices in all our vehicles. But how the process is going to work, depending on the number and the usage, on a day basis, we will submit orders that we do get to a point where we do just-in-time delivery. So we will place an order to say per area we need so many boxes at USASA, and they will engage with the manufacturers to produce the boxes. The manufacturer will take the boxes and deliver it to the warehouse on a weekly basis. It's not a once-off delivery. So on a weekly basis, we will get the boxes into the warehouse. As they come into the warehouse, every box has got a unique serial number, and we've asked the manufacturers to barcode those serial numbers for us. So the moment it gets into the warehouse, it gets scanned, and it's been onto our system that we've accepted, part of our track and trace system. As we then, from an office, place an order to the warehouse to say, I need a box, that tracking number goes through. We know which vehicle it goes in, which know which post office it gets to. So on a daily basis, boxes will be delivered for the next day, for the next 2-3 days in terms of the pattern. If a device gets stolen, we already know what is the number. We know linked to a vehicle. We can then actually put a halt or cancel that, and you can then not sell that. So when you part of the process, when a decoder is installed, you need to read that serial number for it to be activated. Now, if that's not on the system, you will not be able to activate that box. So we've taken care of that whole process in the detailed design. In terms of the payment, yes, we're only collecting the 30%, and we're paying the 30% over to USASA. We are not managing the relationship with the manufacturers where we have to pay them for the boxes. USASA does that. When we look at our roles and responsibilities, we look at the strengths from each company, and we upfront say, these are our strengths, this is what we can do, and this is what we know we can do, and we will do it good. However, from a manufacturing and that relationship, we don't have that capacity, and that's why we've agreed that USASA will do that and continue to do that. We do not wish to get involved in that relationship in terms of the technical development, testing, etc. In terms of the call center that I've talked about is only our internal call center that will handle any queries coming from a post office, be it a customer that walks into the post office or be a teller that wants information. So it is inquiries and assistance from once a person is in a post office. In terms of, just one other thing, in terms of capacity, I think this is such an important project for us that we do have a dedicated project team that is working on this. A dedicated project manager, he works on nothing else but on this project. In terms of the cell phone that we're going to send in SMS, it's not first-time information, it's a repeat and a confirmation. And maybe just to give you a little bit of statistics, when we did the BBB e-share scheme, we had and we tracked the cell phones of the people that actually applied. And at that point, through all of this, we literally had less than 1% of applications without a cell phone. So if you're going to have it, it's really going to be absolutely the minimum. A last comment just on the risk. Chair, we've developed a complete risk register, And we do have mitigation actions for every risk that we've identified so far, and we welcome to share that with you at a later stage. Thank you.
Chair, I think we've addressed most of the questions there, so if not all. If there's any questions that the honourable members feel we have not addressed or that like to further unpack and extrapolate, then please highlight.
This one?
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to register my concern. It's a humble concern that it's quite unfortunate that also in your presentation, post office, you didn't give us a picture in terms of the map where your post office fixed infrastructure is, and which one, in terms of the status quo as it may now, are ready to execute the task. Because if you say that we are still going to invest on IT infrastructure, there are other things that might not happen in 12 months in terms of the IT and the network that practically, as administrators, you are aware of. So we cannot be sitting here as if also you don't take into account the administrative processes and the technical processes that unfold there. Because I don't think we can take a risk as post office or also as a laptop in all other bankrupt infrastructure IT outlets, if I may use that, because they don't. Because also in terms of the upskilling of your personnel also, because if we talk about the capacity, we're not going only talking about the capacity in terms of your IT, your infrastructure, but even your human capital that you have, because of the area some of these personnel works under, so they don't need to, it's like we've got time for Africa, and the computer speaks English, and then I'm used, because of my customers in my area also speaks, this is tools and calls and all that, for them to adapt. Those are the things that he one talks about the infrastructure, so it's not related to the example that has made. So my point, Chair, saying that I think through DOC we should say that we need to go back to the drawing board as administrators and say, are we honest to the committee with all the limitations that we have, notwithstanding the financial ones, but practically speaking, what does that mean? I don't want to talk about the financial administrative cost, because even that one, although I think the DOC needs to deal with that one on behalf of the entities in its totality. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. That will conclude the sample presentation. You see, if you have the issue of risk and mitigating a plan, probably just you have to send it to us. We're asking because it's not being presented. So something not presented, the assumption is that does not exist. What exists get presented. So that's why we're asking about, I was asking about the risk thing and all. But otherwise, thanks very much. I'm sure you took note some of the issues from the members, and you will do as such to deal with those. But anyway, we'll come with an overall conclusion on the matter when we also finalize our report as a committee around this engagement. But otherwise, thank you very much, Chair, and the other board members, the CEO, and the other colleagues which you are having and so on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the honourable members. We have noted the concerns and the advice. We are going to be taking that and ensuring that as part of our plan, number one, we improve on collaboration and also get to understand in more detail what the rollout plan should be in collaboration with the other entities. So thank you very much for your input, and we will get back to you on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Tatu Vet, how are you? You are most welcome. I assume you are still at it. But just help us with one thing, Tatu Vet. We went through your presentation. It
it will swing from the beginning and going somewhere towards the middle and towards the last part of it, the quarter of it. We are talking with this thing which we enjoy very much to talk about. But somewhere start to zoom in on the digital magazine on the eastward, what exactly NEMISA will be doing around digital magazine. We want you to take us to that part. That room where NEMISA rolled on digital magazine. I have not heard the other issues which you are so passionate about, you know, the other stuff which we normally do. but they would appreciate if you just take us towards your exact role on the digital migration project and all. That was it.
Thank you, Honorable Jefferson, and to honorable members of committee and to colleagues here. It's late in the afternoon, and I will take the advice from the Honorable Chairperson to be short and sweet. You know, it's...
No, you want to become spiritual on this thing, don't stop.
Chairperson, you know, in a great book, it says, in the beginning. In the beginning, there was a decision to migrate. In end, it's going to depend on skilled people to deliver on migration and have it a successful program. And that is what MISA and the ESOS Institute are mandated to do. And that is to ensure that when everything has been done in terms of the technology, in terms of all the issues that we've dealt with, that we have the appropriately skilled people to do the installations, but also from an educational and academic point of view, we have to think beyond the skilling of the installers. Because if we only skill the installers, what are those people going to do beyond that? And that is, if you look at our educational system, the problem that we skill people for a specific project, and after that, people are unemployed. So what we're doing in the MISA ESI is to develop an educational program that will include the skilling of installers. And I will take you through, but only on a few slides. I will skip some of the slides. It is just to indicate that when we talk about digital migration and the mandate of the Department of Communication is to develop an inclusive information society knowledge economy. And we have to look at TV and radio in the context of the internet. We're in an internet world, a mobile world. So we also have, when we skill people in this terrain, it is all also to look at the wider context for skills in society and in the country. And I will skip these slides and go directly to this slide. Where we are at this point in time, as far as NEMISA and ESI is concerned. The first phase for us was to analyze and to design and to understand what it is that we have to do in terms of the kinds of skills that we have to deliver. And we've engaged with the industry, many role players in the industry, to say what is it that we have to do. The second phase for us was the design and development phase, where we have to think about a learning pathway. How do we, from the installer, the basic training could be 3 days or a week, how do we get people with that qualification to go on and get more skills in order even to reach a point of getting a diploma in digital media, and I will talk more about that. So we're all in the phase two. We look at course content. What is it we want to deliver? We also look at the delivery mode. And that is face-to-face, but also how do we put our courseware online so that it could be easier to reach people in deep rural areas, in our townships, and how can we, in a face-to-face environment, but also in a virtual environment, e-learning, get to more people to get more people skilled in a very short period of time. We look at the use of tablets, we look at the use of smartphones, and we will have a combination of technology to, and there is also a model for our training that we're working on. Phase three is about the delivery and also our understanding of the impact of what we're doing. So what we're doing now is the same. The first kind of qualification that we have to give people is about the engineering and technical skills. It's a lot of engineering and installation and technical skills that we have to give people. We talk about community support representatives. I think this is where we really think to have an impact, to make sure that we have people in communities, and MNET talked about it this morning. We work very closely with them and other role players to make sure, and this is where actually where we can create the jobs that we're talking about. We also have to look at entrepreneurship, because we're developing a new sector, a new economic sector in Africa. It's going to be based on digital technologies. So we have to make sure that we develop entrepreneurs and still small businesses to be able to find a place in this new environment. Also, very important is content creation. You're going to have all the technologies, but you're not going to have content. And content is not coming from somewhere in thin air. You have to skill people, and we have to skill people within the content of a new emerging economic sector called creative industries. So when we, therefore, as NAMISA and ISCA, as an academic institution, we will try to also think beyond the week-long or three-day-long course that we have to give people to be able to install. This slide is also important in the sense that we need to look at what we're skilling people for as an ecosystem. There are many areas beyond the skilling of the installer where we can skill people for add skills to become employable in other areas in the economy. So that is also something that we have to build into our program in terms of providing people with the skills to move on in life and not a skill for a project that will come to an end and then people are unemployed. We need to build capacity in our society. The following slides, it's also in the document, is really about what we call our ecosystem partners. We've met with industry, all these institutions at one point in time to develop a curriculum.
Is the board member of Ina have something there for enlightenment? Your number two on slide 9, there's Gina, the board member of SABC.
Okay, so the following two slides I'm going to flip through. These are mainly our partners in industry that we work with, getting information, because in the end, we will have to partner in terms of skilling our people with industry that will employ our people as well. So the next few slides are all about, if you go through it, our partners and the areas where we can involve partners in delivering on the e-skilling or on the skilling of people in this new area. I'm going to just run through this to get to this slide where we have to consider a learning pathway. In other words, an NKF level 5, we're breaking up into different certificated courses. So if a person completes a course in installation and it gets certified by a university, there is one course. And then we have two or three other four courses. So if the person will then do four courses, that person will get an NKF level 5 qualification, and that is a first-year university. So the person can therefore, we provide for a person to proceed, and it's not an end when the person gets installation training. And these curriculum we have already developed. We have developed a a PGD, a postgraduate develop a postgraduate diploma in digital media. So right from installation training, a person can proceed through lifelong learning to a postgraduate diploma. And I think that is what is expected also in the new green paper for post-schooling, the program of education and training. The project that will follow is just giving you an idea as to how this learning path will evolve, and we're working on this postgraduate diploma with the University of Pretoria and one of our, what we call the knowledge production hubs in Gauteng. So it is going through the moment through the Senate and Council of University of Pretoria so that we can accreditation. It is very important that we need to get people accredited. I think that is the main thing. For everything that a person does, that must be accredited, either through MICT system or through a university system, and we pursue with that. So this just gives you a sense of, and if I need to go into detail, I will do that later. But this is how we put together the different modules and so on to take students through, and also to remember that our focus is on unemployed. Our focus is on students also with all kinds of qualifications, not only ICT skilled people. We need to get people involved to do this kind of education in order to get them into sustainable and decent jobs. So our immediate intervention, Honourable Chairperson, is, and I think because of the time delay of all of this, we will have to respond quickly to the skilling. So what we will do, and we work in collaboration with industry partners, is the upskilling of existing DSTV installers with the de-installations. Now, there are installers in the country. MTN, for example, and Elis, they have already, trained people in the installation of set-top boxes and antennas. So what we do is now to work with them and upskill or reskill those people. Some of them have already started small businesses. So we will work with industry, and there is at the moment about 6,000 installers in the country, and we can upskill and reskill them to also deliver on DGT installations. Phase 3 or phase 3 will be, of course, new DGT installers, and the focus again is on people and skilled people in rural areas, in townships, and to make sure that we get the unemployed, we get the gender issues right, and so on. And what is very important to mention here is that in terms of curriculum development, and we have a meeting on the 4th with the industry to finalize a national curriculum in DGT. And that national curriculum will be accredited. So we can then say wherever in the country there's someone that can train, the trainers or can train, will use that curriculum. And this is what is important, that we don't have this ad hoc curricula that will take students nowhere in the future. Then just the challenges that we're facing, I think the model, to develop community support, to get facilitators and people trained, and I think there was mention made of CEWs, community development workers, on top of the 6,000 installers already that can upskill and reskill, I think the community development workers will be a good idea. So we have to engage with DPSA, I'm busy doing that, so that we can really, access capacity in communities that exist there. We need to, a challenge is to get business on board, industry on board. I think we're succeeding in that. As I've said, the 4th of next month, we have a final meeting with industry to agree on a national curriculum. Then, of course, as I've said, the selection of learners.
We're waiting on USARS, we're waiting on DOC, we're waiting on to tell us where are the 5 million households, where are the people that we need to train. I think that is very important for us to, and then we can start. So we are ready to skill and to train if we get the data of where it must be done. Then the management of interns, we will get people into work environments, and of course finance. We dependent on the DOC to also make training part of the overall funding situation. And lastly, I think critical success factors. I think it's important that we strengthen the NISA ESI to implement the department's mandate and also the PDC approach to this whole project. Of course, adequate funding is something that we have to consider, and again, we're working with our partners to bring down cost. Multi-stakeholder collaboration, we have to have that. If we can't have that, this will not succeed. So we have to work very hard to get representatives from business, education, government, and we have a network already in the country of 6 universities that are also ready to start. We have special MOUs at this point in time with 26 FET colleges, so we're ready to train the trainer and to ensure that we utilize also that capacity in the country. And for us, it really, in terms of skilling, we need to have 100% installation success. We cannot have distributing set of boxes and then people say, but we can't install it, we don't have the right people to connect with, and your skills or quality of education is not up to standard. So we have to make sure that we do our quality assurance, that we skill people properly to install and to also maintain, and also beyond installation provide services to society in terms of this migration program. So to conclude, as Chairperson, we've done the curriculum in collaboration with our social partners, and we are ready to train and to skill once we get clarity around the number of skills, where we need to skill them, and also making sure that we have the appropriate funding.
Thank you, Dr. Weber. Some of the questions members ask, and the issues raised by ETV, the others are starting to come out of the training and the other things. Honorable Shin, Dr. Weber, your mic. Honorable Shin, before Mustang.
Thank you, Jefferson. My first question is on the upskilling of the existing installers. I presume that those people are already employed, and I presume that their training will be paid for by their employers. That they won't be seeking funding for those. Are you then in the new installers? Presumably, a lot of those will be in rural areas. How will that be identified to find out if they're actually suitable material? If they have the aptitude to do this job, or are you just going to train anyone who volunteers? And if so, what criteria are you really going to use for this? Do you have sufficient trainers in the various language groups that can be deployed around the provinces? And where would this training actually take place? And have you, we must have sort of some sort of vague idea of how many installers you need, new installers you need. Do you have any idea what the cost of this training will be and the length of the training programs? That's it, thank you. And NPR, have you worked together a budget on this and applied to Treasury for it? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question that Honourable Member asked, would like to build on it, saying that in terms of the financial part of it, I didn't hear that, and I didn't see that. But of course, one appreciates that you might not necessarily have a a clear projection in terms of the budget, because based on the presentation that we have received here on from other presenters, that we are not too sure in terms of the 5 million or 6 million, and also where are these beneficiaries located throughout the country, because that one would have given you probably a better picture in terms of your planning. That's one. Two, share. I'm not sure whether it's only the problem that I have in terms of my listening level and synthesizing the information that I get. Based on the presentation that we've just received, Chair, it seems like they projected a new job that has been flagged on. It's not the salary that. It might be lesser. If I heard you correctly, saying that we will also utilizing your DSTV installers and so forth, which are already within the stack of people that have got jobs. As you say, some of them, they've also got their business now. I don't know how then some of us from the entities say that there will be job creation if you, as a custodian of the curriculum, and also have a predetermined students or people that need to be trained. And linked to that, Chair, which is my concern, that in terms of the outskirts areas of our country, like your rural areas in particular, they are coming at the latter, at the third phase of training. I'm not too sure what are we saying on that, or based on the assumption that there are fewer people in the rural areas that have got TVs, but there are more in terms of the reality nowadays, because they use batteries to charge so that they can use TV. What else I wanted to say? So in terms of the installers and the training of the customer care personnel post now the installation, Chair, I think you go further in terms of building, or you have already, because we have also already have a worked on the curriculum, and I'm sure it does cover that, because it's quite critical, that one, for the, especially for the poor end users. Thank you, Chair. And thank you that at least you have completed the way you have presented your curriculum, which is much appreciated in terms of your output as expected. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable Shin has largely covered me. Perhaps two comments. One is what I would have liked to have seen was some sort of timeline in terms of there are obviously things that other entities need to do in order for them to kick off. Now, very similar to what Emmett showed us earlier, I would have liked to have seen something like that that says we need the following, and once that is in place, this is our plan of action, and this is how long it will take. Because I'm also very aware of what the South African Post Office said earlier about training, and perhaps starting off too early, and you may have to go back and retrain people if they, after their training, have to sit and do nothing. And then finally, Chairperson, Honourable Shin touched on the identification and selection process of the installers, the funding. You know, the funding has been, by and large, appears to be a problem, because as we sit here today, if everything was in place to go ahead, we would actually not have the funding to just roll it out. So, and we know what the situation is with the MISA generally and funding. Now, is there a budget that's been calculated based on your perceived need over a period of time? What is the feeling, what is the pulse from Treasury or the Department of Communications in terms of that money being available when you need it? You may have all the other stepping blocks in place, but if the funding is not going to be there when you actually require it, then it's going to upset everything else. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That was the last one. Dr. Rezo, you may respond quickly to the question.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think funding is, yes, it's an issue that runs through the entire program delivery. And I am also in a situation where you know, I'm dependent on the department for final decision on budget. We've submitted, you know, a budget on basis of what we think we need to deliver on, and but I think that will be forthcoming very soon. So that is a risk factor and a dependency. But I think we are going to migrate, and we have developed the curriculum already with current resources that we have. So I believe that the funding issue will be resolved by the department, so that we can be get things going as soon as possible. The upskilling of the installers that we have in the country already, they are not all employed. Some of them are unemployed. Here and there, there's a small business. And they across the country, rural, peri-urban, urban. So we will with the industry, or we will advertise, and we have criteria in terms of basic qualifications, aptitude, and so on, questions that we need to ask. So the idea is to ensure that we have, we're skilling the right people that will add value to the program and to the rollout of the DDT. Do we have sufficient trainers in the different languages? I think that is a real issue that we have to address. I think what we will start with immediately is actually to train the trainer, and that person we will make sure that we have most of the languages covered. That is very important. That is why we need the data from SAPO and the SASA to understand where we have to put our effort, and of course we will have to. Otherwise, it will just not work if we don't cover, you know, the different languages. And especially, we need to train the people in communities, the community support, the facilitators there, whether it's actually CDWs, to ensure. And that is why it's important to make sure whether we put all our energy and budget into call centers, or whether we put our energy and budget into skilling local people in communities. So this is what we will do, and we'll do that. We've started the process immediately after our meeting with SETA next week. The cost of training, of course, there are different models. This morning, Janet indicated that they have a program that we can piggyback on. And I think they happy for us to partner with them, and so we will partner with other private sector entities so we can piggyback on what they're doing. I think for us also not to reinvent the wheel and to overlap and duplicate what other people are doing, but it's really, that is what we have the meeting with the industry to pool our resources. So the cost of training is linked to the available budget that it will receive. The length of the program, I think at least as far as I have engaged with the industry, to get a person to be able to install the set-top box and everything around it will need at least a 4 or 5 days to train. And our curriculum is also developed in such a way that we will cover everything in four to five days. And as I've said, these bits will then add up to a certain level of qualification. The beneficiaries, those are, and I think MNET this morning indicated, if we work on a number of 5 million households, then we look at it, if we move away from focusing on only the installers, but also to community support, we look at $34,000. That it could be sustainable. You know, one person for 200 households. So there at least it gives an idea as to, I mean, if you only know three installers, you're going to have people that will in the end not be able to find a job. So on the basis of that calculation, I think we talk about at least 24,000 jobs spread around the country, urban, rural, peri-urban, and so on. So the training that will happen will happen across the country. Our third phase will really have to focus on where the needs are, because it's so important that we skill people to get a job. I think we cannot afford to give people skills and react to the unemployment problem. So that is why we're very careful in our planning, that we know where people are going to be, we know you know what the needs are, and we skill people accordingly. Customer care, I think honourable members yesterday and this day as well talked about what are the soft skills. I think that is where we have to focus as well, that we, our community support agents will get, yes, a little bit of technical training, but also a lot of other competencies and customer care skills, soft skills as we call it, in order to be ready to support communities. And I think that is just perhaps to emphasize the importance of community support. I think call centers are good, but there is a problem there. People don't want to call centers. I mean, if something goes wrong with my, if I press a button and there's a black screen in front of me, then if the kids are not home, I go to bed and sleep. First, because I don't want to phone a call center, because I have to go through all these very complicated things. So if you have a community person, you can call the person, and perhaps it's just a minor setting on the TV. So customer care and soft skills are built into our curriculum for community facilitators. Then the timeline, I think that is important for us, but it depends, of course, on input from our other SOEs, but I think we, and Honorable Stein is right, that we're working on that program to when we get necessary funding, when we get necessary information from our other colleagues in the SOE environment, that we know what we do. And we will have a plan as soon as we have our final meeting on the 4th of December. It's also very important that we can't start with the training and we don't know really when the set-top box will be there, because you can train people in 5 days, and if they only have to do the job in 6 months' time, you will have to retrain them again. It's a very important process, you know, so we can get people trained and they can immediately do the job. Otherwise, you're going to have a problem in refreshing their minds. So that is all the things we have to consider. I think I respond to most of the issues. I think the main matter that we have to deal with is, you know, that I don't have at this point in time a clear budget for what it's supposed to be doing, but I think the DOC will is at the moment dealing with that matter.
Thank you, Dr. Ben. I just allow you to respond and also do what you do best to elaborate on these matters, because you are so passionate about it. But members, I think that will bring us to the last presentation in terms of the program. There are a few things which we need to deal with before we adjourn. This was the last presentation. The one issue that DOC yesterday presented, they went back and redo or review their presentation,
It will be given to members. You see on the first page also they are explaining the office, the project office and so on into detail. Now members, what we are not going to do, yesterday when we were discussing, we thought that the DG will be here today, because what we don't want to do is to continue with this presentation with the DDG. We want to do this presentation by DOC with the Director General of the Department, the person who is responsible. I'm sure DDG Piri did what he could, and he tried what he could yesterday. But it was clear that the asphalt location of the work is not within the policy division and so on. So some of the issues might not be hands-on and so on. These are the matters which fall squarely in terms of the leadership of the DG and so on. But the presentation is with you. You can look into it to see the, some of the issues were raised. But I would think that probably if time should allow us, because if we are going to present the report currently to Parliament as the committee report, it might cause a lot of problems. Because it means when it comes to resolution, we have to resolve and very in a manner which might cause problems. Probably what we can do is that probably when we come back next year, these are part of the things which we might need to prioritize. Because even the entities which make presentations, there are also some loose ends in some of the presentation which they need to still to go and deal about those particular matters. But I must say that certain issues might not wait for that process. I hope during the presentation, various entities, members raise certain issues which need immediate action and needs to be attended to, which we think that the entities must continue to do so. But the first thing which we need to emphasize at DDG, it will be the role of DOC in commanding and coordinating the process, which does not seem to be coming up very well. I think moving out of here, DOC must go and remind itself that they are the forefront of this process actually, and they should be able to have their fingers. Their fingers must be on the pulse of the process and so on. I think that's one thing which we have come from and so on. The other issue is that taking from the presentation today, I think it will be important that you also go back and sit down with SAPO and USAS based on the realities that USAS or is also facing the renewal or to come up with a turnaround strategy of USAS. What other issues out of those discussions can post office be able to accommodate so that USAS has not given a lot of issues? That's from the point of view that we don't even know their turnaround strategy now, because they still have to come and present to the committee, which will happen next year, to try to minimize so that we don't set them up for difficulties in terms of this process. I think the OC should be able to put them together and see. I'm sure the response from SAPO was saying it will depend on the engagement between the two. Then they can see what they can, but what they can't, they can't, because they don't have the expertise across and so on. The other important issue is the issue around the department versus ETV court case. The reading yesterday was that ETV is willing to engage. DOC has indicated their willingness to engage. SADC is indicating their willingness to engage. I'm sure SANTEP is also willing to engage on this matter to find a solution. If you read the presentation for SANTEC, it's clear that if the matter is resolved, what SANTEC is supposed to do is to implement what comes up as a decision of the actual key role players and so on. So it will be important that DOC probably find a way of leading the process of engaging. I think what will help in that engagement or on the entire process is how do you define the rules of engagement
probably need to sort of formalizing the rules of engagement so that it's clear everyone how the engagement is. And where agreements are reached, they need to be put down and be understood as such that these are agreements which we can be able to follow. So it's just to sort of quasi formalizing the process so that things can be counted for moving forward, not to lose probably and so on. We take the point that there's also the gap in terms of the enabling legislation and so on, but we think we have done very well so far in terms of the consensus engagement and so on. But if indeed there are serious difficulties, we are willing to serve to legislate. If you want that, anything you want, we can be able to do that as a committee. But I think we have been doing well on the consensus engagement, the way we've been dealing the issues and so on. So, but if you have issues, you can deal with that. The regulator, there are quite a number of areas which have come up during the 2 days, which you need to attend to. Which we believe are within your terrain, which you take a lead yourself around the particular issues, ranging from the mass sharing, unused capacity, issues that have been raised, the tariff issue, which I'm certainly sure that the next court case about it, it will be the tariff if it's not attended to. I'm definitely sure. If it's not attended to, the next court case about DTT will be the tariff issue. And I'm sure if you read the presentation, you will see that that tariff issue comes. It's a risk for the entire process. Again, it is not attended in the way. And so I'm sure in MNET, if they can go, there are rules, but I don't think that they will just go without the fighting fact before they can go to other alternative rules and other things and so on. ETV also raised the issue about the tariff and so on. Stantec is raising the issue of saying whatever is happening must be able to cover the cost as the protest has indicated around that particular matter and so on. But overall, those are some of the issues which need to be attended to very quick and so on. The process is of overhauling the current environment. Some of the issues raised with your mass carry in the context of PTC, what does it mean? I don't think there's anyone who wants to argue about mass carry in the context of what it was, and now in the new era of PTC, what will that mean exactly moving forward and so on, so that we're able to deal with those particular matters around those things. But that's not the final recommendation of the committee. The committee is still going to sit down and look into its report and make other recommendations for its finding to Parliament. We hope at that time we should have accommodated the presentation from DOC, because our assessment is that everyone will go back and look in terms of their presentation issues which have been raised, tied up the loose end, DOC wake up and understand that they are lead the process. When we come back and meet, it should not be a long process, because all what will be needed is a project plan, that's all. That's all. No many things, just we need a project plan in terms of timeline and other things, revised timelines in terms of the reality of that time and so on, and the realities about the issue of budgeting and the issues raised by members in terms of stated costs, because we have missed it from the beginning, but now it comes out to be effect on the overall cost. So those are the things which we think they need just to be streamlined, so that when we engage that project, engage on the project plan and the risk and the mitigation circumstances. So, remember, I think generally those are the issues, but if I'm leaving something which you wanted urgently, you can. But we are still going to have the report, which will have its own recommendation, which will be following the parliament processes and so on. It's just that from where I am, it might be a set day when that report comes to the House without having the OC dealt with the presentation. So that by the time we submit that report, they've presented and so on. But for now, we don't have enough time and the DTH is not here. So the indication of not here is that we can't take the report from the DDG. Because the DDG has indicated that it's all in the domain, within the domain of the DDG. So we want the DDG to come and lead that process. No one else to deal with must before we kill him.
Chairperson, just to make sure that the project plan would also include the specific agency that would be responsible for a specific action. You know, timelines, et cetera, and then also sort of the specification of the entity that is responsible. Thank you.
Yes, the understanding that the plan is driven by DOC. So DOC must cover everything. In their plan, yes, entities can have their sub plan, but DOC must have the master plan. Maybe we can call it the master plan, must reside with DOC. The people who can must understand it much better should be DOC than anyone else. Of course, TDG, I hope your recommendation will be taken about re-establishing a board which can assist in facilitating the stakeholder engagement, which you were talking about around that. Members, anything before we... thanks very much, members. It has been 2 long days. Thanks very much from DOD, led by TDG, ICASA, by the chairperson, SABC, by our own team, and everyone who is here, Center CEO. I can see that I still hear the issue of tariff making to sleep. That's good. It must continue to struggle with you, Dr. Veto. Thanks very much also that you are here. Remember, today, tomorrow, we are at E249. What you are trying to do is that if members can be able to be sharp to questions, not more preamble and so on. Because in most cases, of course, it's the right thing. It's us members who took more time than the entities. Combine the presentation and response. Actually, we're taking more time ourselves because we don't go to questions, we start by other things and then go to the question, also myself, of course, included in that and so on. So I hope that tomorrow we need to work business like sort of, not retreating members, but please stay to the question, because what we want to do is that if possible, we must take more entities so that we've got a half day Friday. We don't have to go to work till late Friday. If people are here tomorrow, we try to move them so that Friday we've got early. The program finish early, then we from Avara to Avara areas and so on. Dinner is here, just go out, turn left, stay to the dining hall. Dinner is served there. Thank you very much. The transport issue, it will be also be handled. We are starting tomorrow E249, Gora Pass 9. Thank you.